Tonight on The Download, we talk local politics with the Daily Line's A.D. Quigg and Heather Sharon. We preview the NFL draft with Adam Ho. And another installment of the Swap Meet with Greg Lamb. Now, here's your host, a man who already misses draft town, Justin Kaufman.
I was looking to buy in draft town. I got a realtor and I was going to go down there and see if I could find a two bedroom, maybe some granite countertops. Heard such great things about draft town. Where is it this year? It's in Dallas? Ugh. Not forever. I should be the guy who forever calls Grant Park or downtown Chicago draft town. Like it's a new neighborhood. Just never reference the fact that that's where the NFL, what they called it when the NFL draft was here, but just keep calling it draft town. You know, draft town, Michigan Avenue, Michigan, and right by the Art Institute, draft town. Everybody knows it, right? Draft town. Right behind there. Used to be called Grant Park. Now it's draft town. The NFL draft tomorrow. Hey, everybody. Justin Kaufman. It's a download here on 720 WGN with you till 11 o'clock tonight. What a great show lined up. So excited to be here on the air in Chicago listening to Rob Martier tell us that it might get to 80 degrees next week. Seeing the optimism on the faces of all the Chicagoans and non-Chicagoans walking Michigan Avenue tonight. Can tell they heard that. Now everyone's all jacked up, zipping, that maybe unzipping a little bit on the Canadian goose jackets that we see. Just walk with it unzipped. Great show lined up tonight. It's Wednesday night, so Daily Line is here. Heather Sharon and A.D. Quigg will be here. We'll talk about the mayor's race, movement or non-movement in Springfield. Also some Cook County news as well. Yeah, wow. Yeah, I don't know what to make. We'll talk about it. Save it. I guess we'll save it. The Springfield non-movement, as well as everyone lining up to take on the mayor. And I'm intrigued because I'm not sure if a complete star has jumped into the race for mayor. Someone who really, just on their name rec alone, would give the incumbent a run for his money. I don't see it yet, but maybe Heather and AD will tell me something different, or maybe some brewing rumors around who might else jump in the ring for the municipal election coming up next year, early next year. Downloading Chicago business tonight, Farmer's Fridge. Luke Saunders, the CEO, the founder of a company that is not only disrupting healthy lunch options, but they're disrupting the vending machine market. Farmer's Fridge, if you work anywhere downtown Chicago and Milwaukee as well, but in downtown Chicago, there are vending machines with fresh salads. You've seen them everywhere. And they're working. More and more people want the product that's in the vending machine, and the company continues to expand. We'll talk about what it takes to be in that high turnover business. I mean, I know vending machines. I remember because we had to fill vending machines at a company I worked with when I was in college. That doesn't seem like it's the most lucrative. But when you're talking about fresh food, it's not necessarily where I would think that the vending machine world is headed, but it could be where we're heading.
I would kill for, at Chirp, where I volunteer, another little radio station, there's a vending machine, and I get hungry every once in a while. I go down to the vending machine. And, I'd love, instead of Pop-Tarts,
instead of chili cheese Fritos
for like 3 years.
Right. Yeah, that's what they do.
Great.
And there's all sorts of software, and essentially, they're tracking what's been sold and how it's been sold out of these very smart vending machines, and they're able to refill them and keep them fresh. We'll talk about that coming up here on The Download. Also tonight, Adam Hogue's going to join us, talk NFL draft, what are the Bears going to do with their first round pick, but I have to ask, what are the Bears going to do with their second round pick? I mean, forget that the Bears have one of the top picks in the second round as well. They have the opportunity to get two high caliber players in this year's draft, and no doubt do we need it. The Bears look to improve upon last season, Also coming up, the band Preoccupations, formerly Viet Cong. Talked a little bit in the crosstalk about their name change, but we'll talk about their new album, just called New Material. Their first two albums under the name Preoccupations were just self-titled. And their third album, which is just out, they're playing Empty Bottle and Co. Prosperity Sphere this weekend. It's just called New Material. We'll talk about their world around naming. And the swap meet tonight, Greg Flamm will be here, 312-981-7200. The best stuff tonight will get you a pizza. So we got a lot to do, so why don't we get to it? News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back and do the carry out, so stay with us. So Download, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Let's carry out. Here today is top stories. In Springfield, the Illinois Senate did what they do best, and that's nothing. Senator Dan Harmon told reporters today that he had the votes to override the gun licensing veto, but didn't call it to a vote because they didn't have the votes in the House. So why go on record and embarrass everybody or give political points to somebody else? Politics as usual, even in an election season. So he has the votes to override, but he doesn't want to put them on record. Regardless of which side you're on in this issue, and recent polls say 70% of Illinoisans do want the override, but regardless, this is how government is not supposed to work. That's how politics works. There should be a difference, but I guess campaign flyers and attack ads are now the true leaders of our state. For shame, man. Come on. What gets done in Springfield? First, no vote on banning tackle football for 10-year-olds, and now no gun licensing. State Dems and state Republicans, not your finest days. Like I said yesterday, maybe it's time for vacation. A fire in a building on Jewelers Row today gutted a few places of business, destroying records and offices, but not the gemstones. Gemstones. Good. Did this actually happen, or is it just a promotion for the new Avengers Infinity Wars movie? Right? Gemstones? Infinity Stones? I don't know. A purple giant from space was seen walking down Wabash today, and he was intercepted by a man the size of an ant. Phil Rogers, NBC News. Did you see the big investigative piece on ABC7 the other day about how Metra commuters are standing all the way home because of super crowded trains? Yeah, they're super crowded because most Metra trains are running short a car or two because of repairs or weather. And Metra just doesn't have the funds or resources to replace those cars, even though they just raised fares this year. I didn't know this was happening. As a former daily commuter on Metro, I'm annoyed that I didn't know this. Standing room only all the way to Aurora? What? That's unacceptable, right? First you take away the drinking cars, now this? Maybe time to change the slogan. Maybe from Metra, the only way to fly, to how about Metra, the only way to stand? That's ridiculous, man. I mean, even shows that are sold out pull out the folding chairs. You know, like if you're at a picnic and you run out of seats, someone's like, well, I got a couple, you know, let me go to the garage real quick. Metro needs to go to the garage. Housing Secretary Ben Carson is proposing higher rents for those who live in public housing. Well, yeah, that was the problem all along. Good job. You nailed it. Now maybe the CHA can have more of a surplus. Good work. The nominee for Veterans Affairs Secretary is under fire for allegedly wrecking a government vehicle while intoxicated after leaving a Secret Service party. Hey, we've all been there, right? Although, if it happened to you, you'd probably be fired or possibly jailed. But for Ronnie Jackson, no way. He gets to head the VA. President Trump has said that the Senate confirmations are unfair and that why would Jackson even want this job? Why are they unfair? Jackson's only... also being accused of dishing out opioids at alarming rates as a doctor and for drunkenly banging on a female coworker's hotel room door on a trip overseas. Now, if these allegations turn out to be fake news, I agree, President. It's unfair. But if they are true, what's unfair about vetting non-elected people to run huge taxpayer-funded positions in the government? Right? Seems pretty fair.
Denise! Are you in there? It's me, the head of the VA.
Ford Motor Company's cutting back on selling some of its cars. It'll stop selling the Focus, the Fiesta, and the Fusion to North American consumers. So get ready for a ton of 2019 Ford Fiestas in Brazil. Ford Fiesta, Fusion, Focus. What about the Escort? Classic Wonder Lake starter car, right? Please tell me you're not giving up on the Escort. Say what now, you already did? That's what they should do. They should get rid of all those F cars I just mentioned, the F class Fords, and just say, you know what, all we're doing from here on out, the Explorer and the Escort. That's it. In weather, it's nice. As you heard Rob Martier say, maybe 80s next week. Wow. In sports, the NFL draft is tomorrow. The Bears have the 8th pick overall and a top pick in the 2nd round as well. They have a true shot to get 2 premier Pro Bowl caliber players in the stocked draft. It's a bunch of QB starved teams, and the Bears, for once, are not one of them. So there's a chance they could snag a linebacker like Roquan Smith out of Georgia, or a safety like Minka Fitzpatrick from Alabama, or the Notre Dame guard Quentin Nelson. Man, Minka Fitzpatrick would be amazing. Let me try him out, see if he fits. 3rd down, here we go. Aaron Rodgers throws deep and low. No, flag thrown. Pass interference on Minka Fitzpatrick. 1st and goal, Packers. That feels about right. Yeah, I can see that fitting. The Bears are one of the lucky teams that really have a need everywhere but quarterback, so they really can't go wrong, right? That being said, they'll do it wrong. We'll talk with Adam Ogg coming up at 9 o'clock. The big issue is that the Bears are without a 3rd-round pick this year, surrendering for the draft moves to get Mitchell Trubisky last year. But there's always a chance that the Bears trade down, get more players in this draft. All we know is that there's going to be a ton of young, talented, strangely dressed athletes at Cowboys Stadium tomorrow night. That's what we watch for, right? Loyola Chicago stepped up and extended coach Porter Moser after the awesome Final Four run, so he's going to stay in Rogers Park? Really? I would have sworn he'd be the new coach at Louisville or some other scandal-plagued school, right? Speaking of college basketball, commission said that it needs to be fixed. The biggest problem, one-and-done players. Really? How about the idea that those players don't get paid, right? We're just going to avoid that elephant in the room, Condoleezza Rice? Okay, cool. The Cubs have a big national spotlight game tonight against the Indians. They walloped Cleveland last night thanks to big games from Schwarbs and Happ. Still no Chris Bryant tonight. He's still out after getting hit in the head on Sunday. Coach says, Madden says he might be back tomorrow. The Sox lost 4-3 this afternoon. They lost the series to the Mariners. Tough series for the Sox, who lost Avi Garcia to a strange hamstring. And then today, Jose Abreu to the flu. The only solace today is the day that you can bring up guys from the minors and not pay them for an extra year. Holla! So that means what? Can we see some of these prospects? No? Anybody? Hello? Daniel Palka? Well, cool, I'll take him. Where is he at in the top 100 list? Oh, that's the first page. Oh, he's on the... Well, I love his name. Could get a lot of Palka references in the booth if he gets hot, right? Another homer for Moncada today. Kid could play. Tomorrow, the Sox head to Kansas City for a showdown with the Royals. They just got back Salvador Perez. NBA playoffs, I forgot to mention yesterday, Marco Bellinelli plays for the Sixers. Another former Bull. Steve Kerr as well, coach of the Warriors. When did they do the lotto balls? Is that coming up? I think it's coming up soon. Hope so. Also, hard to watch all the Game 7s and Stanley Cup playoffs, right? Round one here. Just brings back the fact that the United Center is dark this spring. And finally tonight, Kanye West is back. Oh joy. The positive, new music apparently coming in June. The negative, everything else. Kanye told the world that he loves President Trump because they both share, quote, dragon energy, which of course is code for the love of porn stars. Yeah. Just listen to half of Kanye West's lyrics. It has to do with adult film stars as well. To carry out April 25th, 2018. It's Wednesday. Why cook anything? The week's halfway over. Just carry out. We won't tell anybody. All right, coming up, A.D. Quigg and Heather Sherrod are here from the Daily Line. We'll talk all things politics. 8 o'clock, the download on Chicago Business, Luke Saunders from Farmers Bridge, and then the band Preoccupations. We've got a big show, so let's get to it. It's a download, 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm channeling that dragon energy, brother. Boom.
I'm going to take some of that
locked
dragon
and
energy and point it towards the Metra for that story that I saw on ABC7 where they're essentially doing standing room only all winter long. And because they can't get enough cars in service because of repairs and things like that.
Yeah.
I'm channeling back to when I had to take the Metra and would have to go, you know, back and forth from Crystal Lake. And so I feel like now I feel like I can be a spokesperson for all the people who are having to stand all the way to Aurora.
In an office environment, you always know the people who ride Metra during the winter months.
Because the gym shoes?
Nope. Because they're the ones that are hacking all over you. I just got off the train. I'm good. Good.
Well, hey, maybe this helps because they stand. They lord over.
Good. Good. Ugh. I'll make it. You know, you're not looking too good, Pete.
Yeah.
I'm good.
I'm good.
All right, man.
Here's the news. Thank you, Rob. Download 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here. The download. 80 Quick, Heather Sharon from the Daily Line in studio tonight. We do this every Wednesday to talk about all the big ticket items in politics. Good to see you guys. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
All right, so let's talk first about Springfield. I was kind of harping on this in the carryout that Senator Harmon chose not to call the bill that would be a veto override in the Senate. He said he had the votes to override the gun licensing bill that was vetoed by the governor during the election, during the primary. This is a strange way we do politics, Heather, in the way that he has the votes, but he doesn't want to vote? What's happening here?
It's very confusing. So now they basically have to start over from zero. And of course, this bill was passed in the days right after Parkland, the horrific school shooting that killed 17 people. And, you know, Mayor Emanuel campaigned very, you know, openly for it. I think that I chuckled at some of his tweets, which, you know, pointed out that catfish is regulated and licensed in the state of Illinois,
right.
But you don't need a state license to sell a gun in Illinois. You need a federal license. And Governor Rauner's argument is, of course, that this is duplicative,
yeah.
It's bureaucracy. But it sort of seems that a little bit of the wind that was pushing these gun reform measures has dissipated a little bit in Springfield, especially with there not even being a vote whether it was successful or unsuccessful to override the governor.
And it's just strange the way politics has turned into a game of not getting on the record. And it's amazing, and we know why. We've talked about it on this program. You know, if you put yourself in a position where you say you're for this vote or you're against this vote, that a challenger coming up in an election can use that and put it on a flyer or maybe put an attack ad together. But is this how we're going to do it now? Is this how governing happens, and not just in the state of Illinois, but in this entire country, that no one is willing to actually get anything done because they're afraid of what the consequences might be?
In an election year, yes. It's the worst in an election year, and especially as we get closer and closer, and even seeing how bitter the primaries were, I think the fewer contentious votes that happen, the better. I think everyone wants to get as many things done as possible, especially a budget.
And it's another indication that, you know, Illinois is more than just Chicago, because really, once you get outside the collar counties, Illinois is still very, very rural. So it was possible that the override would have passed the Senate and then failed in the House, and it would have put those Democrats in the southern part of the states on the hook for having to make a very controversial vote. But again, you know, I sort of reminds me of all the controversy over former President Barack Obama's present votes in Springfield, which is sort of a way to vote without actually making a decision and sort of keeping your powder dry. And this just seems like it's like
this
you
is
said,
one
it's,
big presence.
It's like the entire everybody is voting present.
I think it hurts the Democrats, and I think it hurts this movement, because the bill was passed during election season, and there were some skeptics that said this is the Democrats' way of trying to get once again the governor on a social issue about guns to essentially polarize him when it comes to his own primary election and beyond. And you know, there's a lot of people push back saying it's a cynical look at it. Well, here we are where they have the votes to actually override the veto and they won't do it, so it almost proves those cynics' point, the point that all that was for show. That was a political tactic during an election, and they don't really care about gun control or gun licensing in the state of Illinois.
Yeah, and let's not forget that this bill also served to sort of make Rauner wear the jacket during the primary with Jeannie Ives,
right,
who very much, you know, favors gun rights and expanded gun rights as opposed to gun control. So it was sort of the Democrats daring Rauner, go ahead, veto this, prove everybody that you're not this sort of middle of the road guy. And he did. And there's no doubt that at least, you know, it didn't hurt him against Jeannie Ives because it took that away from an issue from her. And now it just sort of seems like it's all gone poof, you know, that the immediacy and of the election is over.
I was going to say, and regardless of where you stand on the issue of gun control or regulation and whether the states should be, and this is a federal issue, the politics of this was not great by either party in how it played out in the state of Illinois. So, moving on, let's talk about the mayor's race, huh? A lot of people getting into the race, and you know, it's starting to get exciting as the list gets longer.
It's an insanely long list.
It's already a very long list. Is this part of the course when it comes to a mayoral election that you get all these people and then one by one they kind of drop off, or is this an inordinate amount of people that are running for office?
Well, it's important to note that nobody has actually started collecting signatures and nobody has actually pulled papers yet.
They're not due until November. We have so much time.
Yeah. So really, you know, as we saw with the assessor's race, which I know AD misses and, you know, longs to return to, that it may seem simple to get, you know, 20,000 signatures from registered voters in Chicago. It may not be, especially for the newcomers like Neil Sales Griffin and Jamal Green. And so, you know, they're going to have to learn very quickly how to play this game. And I would expect that we would see some of them drop out. On the other hand, you have people like Dorothy Brown and Gary McCarthy who have very serious operations behind them and know how to get those petitions filled out and filed.
The big political news of the week was the announcement Dorothy Brown was going to throw her hat in the ring. She, of course, got a lot of headlines that would be someone who's running for office with a federal investigation around her. But she is a veteran politician and a veteran city politician in the way that she has risen the ranks. I mean, does that mean anything when it comes to running for the top spot in the city of Chicago?
Definitely. I mean, she's been around for 5 terms as clerk, has run unsuccessfully for several offices, but has been...
Including mayor
in 2007?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Against Daly.
Against Daly, right. Right,
2007.
Right.
I was just staring at her old poster. It's hanging up in the City Hall press room, and I was like, that poster is better than the one she has
right
now.
Did it say, if you wear jeans, put a dollar in the jar?
No, but it does have a 5-pointed star instead of a Chicago 6-pointed star, which I thought was interesting.
Oh.
Anyway, she has a good political organization behind her that has faithfully turned out for her in all these clerk elections, but has not in these other ones. She is a known entity, and she had no problem being reelected in 2016 when people knew she was under federal investigation then, too.
And not only that, but she had an opponent who was endorsed by the Cook County Democratic Party, Alderman Michelle Harris. So sort of her 8th ward rival. So I think it would be, I don't think you can count out an elected official in these sort of races. I was interested to see that Alderman Amaya Puar, who of course ran unsuccessfully for governor and will leave the council at the end of his term, said that he had not yet seen sort of somebody that could rally the progressive movement in Chicago around. So I think that there are a lot of people like you sort of counting all of the candidates and then sort of, you know, questioning
who's got the star power.
Who is your constituency? Because all of these constituencies that we generally think of in Chicago politics, which are a lot based on ethnicity and a lot based on what side of town you can get, are being dissolved the more and more candidates get in. We have the Black vote being broken up, kind of the we don't know who the progressive vote will be. There's no Latino candidate, which is interesting. There's still so much time, and there's still a couple candidates who we're hearing might get in, might not.
Let's do this. Let's take a quick break and so we can continue the conversation. AD Quigg, Heather Cherone in studio from the Daily Line, talking all things city, state, and county when it comes to politics. We'll take a quick break and come back. It's a download. Stay with us. AD Quigg, Heather Cherone from the Daily Line in studio tonight. We're talking politics. We're talking mayoral race shaping up as a lot of different names getting in. Whether or not they'll stay in is a question. We saw this week, we talked about Dorothy Brown. Neil Sales Griffin, a tech, a businessman?
Entrepreneur.
African-American who got in front of the crowd for the first time and then halfway through his speech apologized. It was this very strange way to start.
Speech. Yes. It was like 90 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, and that's not a great way to start when you're trying to get your name out there and trying to get everyone's attention. You got everybody's attention, but hard when the microphone and the lights are on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can't think of any mayoral candidate who I think has been disqualified by a bad opening speech. There's so much time left, but not an exactly
not
auspicious
a great
start.
Jamal Green, an activist here in Chicago, well known for organizing police protests in the wake of the Laquan McDonald video. He also, I think he had a couple run-ins with the police where, wasn't he the kid who was arrested at one of the protests and then he got out.
Chased to Chicago.
Right. Yeah. Jamal Green's interesting, but he has spoken out against the Chicago Police Times, through social media posts using derogatory terms for police officers. I don't know how that's going to play out in the sense that
he's also made some comments about gay people and women that have raised a lot of questions. That, you know, he basically said, look, I apologize. I didn't know what I didn't know. And, you know, I'm going to start fresh. But it's difficult when you're 22, I think he is, and then you're already having to apologize for things that you've done.
I'm so glad there wasn't Twitter when I was 22.
Yes. And you cannot walk back too far the things that you said about police if the thing that you're running on is police reform.
Right.
So he'll have to thread that needle pretty carefully.
And then on the flip side, you have a candidate, the former police superintendent, Gary McCarthy. We've talked a lot about him on the program, but he would be running pro-police. And then you have Lori Lightfoot, who has had a role in, I don't want to say defying the mayor in the past.
No, I know.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
But she has been with the Civilian Accountability Board. Is that what she?
The Police Accountability Task Force she chaired, and she's also been the president of the police board, which decides discipline when police oversight bodies disagree.
And she has been critical of the mayor's office, and a lot of people want to see her get in the race.
Well, I mean, she played not a small role with Attorney General Lisa Madigan enforcing a consent decree, at least negotiations where we are now. And that, I think, will give that, you know, that will certainly be her I'm not Rahm Emanuel bona fides, because, had she not added her voice to Lisa Madigan's efforts, I think we might not be in consent decree negotiations.
Now, I will speak for the layman among us, as the layman here. All those names, and a lot of them have been on the show, and I really do think that they bring something to this race, and they're thoughtful and it's interesting, but they don't bring that star power. They don't bring that person who has held elective office. I mean, I think of maybe Paul Vallis, maybe Dorothy Brown, but someone who you feel has both the star power and the ability to raise money to take on an incumbent, someone with a big name like Rahm Emanuel. Am I wrong in thinking that? The idea that, I mean, is that just old school thinking where I'm like, I need a star to run against a star? Or can someone who really doesn't have that kind of backing surprise us?
Well, that was certainly Rahm Emanuel's argument when he moved back to Chicago in 2011. I mean, his argument was, do you trust just anybody to run this huge, sprawling, crazy, messed up city? I can do it. And I think that there's a level that candidates will eventually have to cross is, are they capable of handling the challenges? I think a lot of people are holding their breath and waiting to see what Congressman-elect Chuy Garcia does. I think he is very much feeling his newfound power as a kingmaker. He brought his slate along with him. And I think who he chooses to back or endorse in the mayoral race will be a big deal. Yeah. It will also be a big deal if he does it in concert with the Chicago Teachers Union. Now, the Chicago Teachers Union does not want to see Rahm Emanuel get a third term. They don't want to see Paul Vallis get elected instead of Rahm Emanuel.
They're not terribly keen on Troy LaRavier either.
Right.
Troy's running as well, and Willie Wilson's running as well.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of, I want to make sure we try to get everybody we can, but there's a lot
of people. What is interesting about this group of candidates is that they all point out a weakness that the mayor has currently. There are police reform candidates, there are school reform candidates, and there are anti-violence candidates, which are like all of his big bugaboos. What he is succeeding on, I think, arguably, is bringing business to downtown. I haven't seen any business or finance candidates who have said, here's how we can fix the city's pension problem, here's how we can continue to have balanced budgets, and here's how we can stop this outflow of people from the city.
I mean, because that's essentially what tripped up Chuy Garcia last time around, because his argument was, well, you know, Rahm's not doing the right thing. And then it was, okay, well, what would you do? And he really never had a complete answer to that, which allowed Emanuel to you know, sort of tar him with the, oh, he's just going to raise your taxes.
Yeah, right.
And it's going to be
a mess. Did.
And then, right. You know, of course, and not only that, but, you know, Rahm Emanuel turned around and did exactly that, a historic, massive tax increase, and then hired 1,000 new police officers, which Rahm Emanuel said he wanted to do. Which is what Chuy Garcia wanted to do.
It's interesting. And that'll be interesting to see. I can't wait to continue this conversation and talk. I love this stuff. And it's going to be definitely a race to watch as the municipal election. It's already overshadowing what was going to be the general in November. We still haven't finished. It feels like the governor's race is finished, but there's still...
Well, there was a new poll out today that found Pritzker 18 points over Rahner.
Wow.
So
there
we'll see.
Heather Sharone, AD Quigg, both of the Daily Line. You can find it at dailyline.net. Join us every Wednesday. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Anytime.
It's business time. It's business. It's business time.
That's right. It's time for the download on Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank. It's our weekly segment where we talk to Chicago area CEOs and entrepreneurs. They tell their stories so we can better understand ours. Tonight, let's talk automated eateries. Farmer's Fridge operates in over 130 locations across Chicago and Milwaukee. It's a business that makes handcrafted dishes at in-house kitchens and delivers them in jars to vending machines. Did I get it? I think I got it,
yeah,
right?
It's perfect.
If you eat lunch in food courts downtown, you're very familiar with Farmer's Fridge. It's a company that's both about the product and about the delivery. The vending machine serves as a disruptor for brick-and-mortar restaurants, just smaller brick-and-mortar. The company, founded in 2013, is run by CEO Luke Saunders. Saunders has a background in sales, and as an entrepreneur, his first company was called Bears Bikes, but it's Farmer's Fridge that's turning heads as the company has been prominently featured in national media, and Saunders was just featured in the Forbes 30 Under 30 list, and he is in studio, my guest in the Download in Chicago Business. Luke Saunders, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
This concept is one that has all of the disruptor vibe that we talk about on this program all the time. This idea of starting something new, experimenting, and bringing a new concept to lunch. Where does it come from, the idea of putting salads in jars and putting them in vending machines?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. It really started when I took a sales job in Michigan while my wife was in law school. And, you know, I had signed up. I wanted to get a paycheck while she was in school and learn sales. And what I didn't realize I had signed up for was just eating garbage for a few years. So it was like a lunch was a candy bar and dinner was fast food. And so I was driving 1,000 miles a week and going, I covered Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, and Kentucky.
Wow.
And during that time, I was really thinking, how could I get better meals for myself?
Right.
And a lot of my clients were actually big CPG manufacturers. And so I started thinking, you know, if I could make food in this really efficient way, you know, how could I get it to people faster? Because really, at the end of the day, it's the reason a candy bar is a candy bar is it takes a couple months to get it to you. So it has to be shelf stable and still taste pretty
Absolutely.
Good. You can't do that with a salad. So.
I'm just amazed by it because it's had such success here in Chicago and Milwaukee, but mm-hmm. in Chicago because it really is a new concept. There are not a lot of opportunities, a lot of instances where you have seen fresh food in vending machines. Those two concepts don't go hand in hand. There have been others who have maybe tried it, entrepreneurs have thought about it. What makes Farmer's Fridge work where others have not been able to get this concept right?
Yeah, so I would say it's two very important things. One, and most importantly, is the quality of the product. So from day one, we didn't have a lot of money. I started this business with credit cards. And at the very beginning was, how do we create a really great product that people are going to want to buy again? So it sounds really
right,
simple,
sure.
but that was
customer loyalty, sure.
Rule number one. And then in order to do that, we actually had to have a fully integrated business. So we actually build our own technology. We make the food ourselves in our own kitchen. We deliver that food to every fridge ourselves. It's obviously a branded customer experience. So from end to end, we control everything about that experience to make sure that it is really as good as it can be for the consumer.
It's amazing too, because a lot of entrepreneurs, because it's probably a difficult sell to get customers to buy in, we'll talk about that, would go that route, would do in-house kitchens and make the food themselves and try to sell it to a distributor, try to sell it to a restaurant, try to sell it to a to-go counter at the airport. Talk about why you didn't do that. Why didn't you go for what would be the more traditional route as opposed to straight to a vending machine?
Yeah, well, I think two reasons. One is in that CPG world I was living in, I saw all these distributors and retailers, and so what I really saw were middlemen and people who were taking money in the process of getting you your product. So it's like an invisible tax that the consumer is paying on everything that they eat.
Right.
And so I thought, well, if one way to have a higher quality product is to just go straight to the consumer. And that was a big part of it. So
for you, what's the most important, when you're at the stage where you realize that, yeah, I want to find healthier options. I can make this product and I can also distribute this product. Just as how do you go about that? What, I mean, you're just thinking, I'm going to build a vending machine. Talk about the process of really getting that step of getting the food to the customer.
So I was, you know, driving a lot and I had a lot of time to think. And so I started thinking, what are the design constraints of this business? And so part of it was, it can't be a restaurant if it's going to be more convenient. If I'm going to get it directly to consumers, there has to be a way to distribute it. So I want to sell food 24 hours a day because I bet there's lots of people in the middle of the night like me who don't have any options. And so that's extra business that nobody else is competing for. So I had this list. I need to manage the inventory. I want to create a personalized relationship with people. So track, you know, help make merchandise the food better, things like that. So it's not just this sad experience where you walk up and pull it off the shelf and inspect it to make sure the lettuce isn't brown or something.
Right, right.
So when I added all that stuff up, I realized that actually a vending machine was a great mode of delivery and would solve a lot of those problems. So I could put it in places that a restaurant couldn't go. It'd be less expensive to set up. It would keep the product merchandise and perfectly cold. I could track the inventory if I built the right software. So it was really, back solving. Here's the problem I'm trying to solve. What are some of the things that have to be true if I'm going to solve that problem? And then this is what that looks like. I really would never set out to do a vending machine salad business. And even now we do breakfast. Ours actually our best sellers. We do breakfast, lunch, dinner, meal, snacks.
That's amazing.
And yeah.
I read somewhere, I was reading an interview where at first you spent a lot of time in the design of the vending machine. And then you realize that the consumer is coming back for the food. They don't care if it's designed, if it's a floral design, if it's is it a cool like vibe, that it's really about the food.
Yeah, I mean, to your point about how did we get consumers to try it? And at the beginning, it was like everything in the kitchen sink. So if you look at the pictures of the first fridge, it was in the middle of a food court. And I had actually begged them. I repainted the wall. I bought all these plants. I bought this big AstroTurf thing to put down in front. We had tried like a Persian rug and that didn't look right. And then someone was like, my mother-in-law actually was like, you need to try AstroTurf. And so I put a huge block of AstroTurf in front of it, plants on top that I had to water every week. I mean, we did everything we could think of to make people break their association with a typical vending machine. It was reclaimed wood. And, you know, over time, we sort of little by little took some of those elements away to see what really resonated with consumers. And yeah, to your point, what we found is actually the first thing they looked at was the food. So everything else was a distraction. And if you could just keep those avocados green, that was it.
And all this money for marketing, everything that goes in, you're like, yeah. No, it's just about just keep the avocados fresh.
Yeah, exactly. So like everything we do is about investing in that product.
Luke Saunders is in studio. He's the CEO of Farmer's Fridge. You can find him 130 plus locations in Chicago and Milwaukee. When we come back, let's talk about that association. Because I would assume that if you just telling somebody on the street, oh yeah, I do salads and vending machines, there's a lot to overcome when it comes to the preconceived notions of customers and how you break through in that. Luke Saunders, my guest in the Download in Chicago Business. Stay with us.
It's business time. It's business. It's business.
It's Download in Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank. In studio tonight, the CEO and founder of Farmer's Fridge, Luke Saunders. We're talking about the 130 plus locations across Chicago and Milwaukee. And essentially, salads and fresh food that are in jars, that are in vending machines. We talked right before about the association, the customer association of food from vending machines. They don't think fresh food. They don't think salads. They don't think breakfast, lunch, and dinner. They think things that I need right now, useless calories.
Yeah.
That I'm going to use, and it's not good for me, but I've got 80 cents, and I gotta take care of this. How do you get past the customer notion of what vending machine food is?
Yeah, so I'll never forget when I first told my friends this idea, and they said, no chance, like, no one will ever get over it, right? There's the food, I don't care how good your food is, I'm like, these are my friends, I'm not going to buy food from you, because that just sounds so wrong. And I think, you know, we spent so much time thinking about it, everything from the jar packaging to the way that the fridge was set up to really break these associations. So, I mean, I obsessed about it for like 6 months before we launched, and then continue to obsess about it for the last 5 years. And really, ultimately, it's just getting them to try it that first time. And actually, 50% of customers will come back within a month and try it again, as long as they've had that food. And so now it's kind of reached a positive momentum. And what I've learned is, you know, ultimately consumers really do stuff because it's cheaper, faster, better. And that's what we are. We're cheaper, we're faster, and it's better quality food. And so they just, it took that little spark, but they get over the hump, and it's great.
The big deal with this, which I find really interesting, is the tech behind it. The software that you have to use, and talk about this, because it's not that you have one guy who's on rounds and he goes to check and see if someone took B4. You know, B10's out. Let's go get a Cobb salad. You don't have those numbers, right?
It's the B4.
You have software that tells you what has been bought, catalogs it, and knows exactly what needs to be replaced in terms of freshness. That's a big part of this business. It's really the reason why this kind of thing can exist.
Yeah, no, when I was starting the business, one of the reasons I said, why now? You know, why hasn't this been done before? And what I realized is there was this convergence of technology where I could have a connected device, I could use cloud software, we don't have a single server, and I could actually create a direct relationship with my consumers thanks to social media, email, that you could not have done in the past. And so a lot of that, you know, walk in a restaurant, you talk to the person on the other side, that can now be done digitally. So I knew that we were at this special moment in history where you could tie all that together and create a unique experience for your consumers. And today, the way that it works is you actually have a cost function algorithm. So it sounds really fancy, but it's really just a way of saying that every night we calculate what's the probability of selling that item versus the profitability of sending it out. And then the system runs itself, and we make that food, and then we put it on a truck, and we go out and we deliver it.
Interesting.
So it's this really tight 24-hour cycle based on that algorithm that runs every night.
The other issues, of course, quality, as you mentioned, you know, obviously we've seen with salad, with recalls and other situations, and doesn't affect your product, but it could at different times. And as can you be responsive with this software to deal with challenges that come from food issues, from any sort of contamination, things like that?
Yeah. So unlike a normal vending machine, we can remotely lock things out. So if there were ever an issue, we would just lock it. Like, you would not be able to buy it. Like, press a button and they all go away. And actually, you can see that sometimes people show up on a Sunday night and the fridge doesn't get restocked on the weekend in certain locations. You actually can't buy the product because we've put a freshness meter. Like, it just stops selling it. If the power were to go out and the temperature goes up, can't buy the food. So there's a lot of built-in safety features. We also have our whole kitchen is refrigerated, and then we have refrigerated trucks, refrigerated fridges. So everything is this really tight cold chain. And because we have one facility, we actually wash everything in-house. We're processing it in a very tightly controlled environment. So that's a lot of what allows us to control the quality, but also make sure it's safe.
Is this, I mean, it begs the question about the future of food and the future of food delivery. I mean, we're seeing more and more of this, a premium put on this kind of content and this kind of food, this kind of product. Are you going to see, I mean, put your trend hat on here. Do you envision other people getting into to compete with you, and even big brands, people who, you know, might be the fast foods of yesterday to tomorrow? They're like, you already see these kind of stories that pop up on the Google feeds and of a restaurant and somewhere that's trying robots and cooking burgers. I mean, yeah. do you see people following your lead when it comes to disrupting the food industry?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a lot of people, and even before we started, as we did research, we found that people had tried and failed. And then, you know, people obviously see something successful, they want to replicate it. So I hope we started a trend. I mean, at the end of the day, it's about how many consumers are willing to buy their lunch in this format. And as that market grows, it's good for everybody who's in it. So today that's a lot more people than when I started. So we, you know, 20 lunches a day if we were having a really good day, and now we'll serve thousands of customers in Chicago.
All right, so let me ask the big question about, you know, you started this talking about being a salesman in states like Michigan and Kentucky, and that was your area in the Midwest. How do you see this company growing? I mean, what are the challenges of scaling up here? Can you see a vending machine at a truck stop, a farmer's fridge truck stop? How do you even do that with the fact that you really need fresh ingredients and you need this constant plant watering, if you will? yeah. I mean, how do you see it? Do you see global domination in your future?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about global domination, but we certainly see that the model is working and can get to the places that we want to bring it. So, you know, when I started, going from zero to one machine was like a miracle. And then, you know, one to 10 was sort of like, okay, but 10 to 100 was, I mean, to me, way harder than the 100 to 1,000. And a lot of that was because we had to actually prove out the economics of the business. So now we cover all the Chicagoland region. We're up into Milwaukee, and we're doing locations that I never could have done at the beginning. And that continues to be something that is a positive reinforcing cycle. So absolutely. I mean, we have better food quality today. So I used to be the plant manager. I'm a terrible plant manager. we have a real plant manager now. And so actually our quality has improved over time. The menu gets better over time. We get better data. And essentially, you know, a truck stop sounds great. I'll never forget when I first started, a trucker actually sent me an email. Hey, this solves a problem for me. I need you to get into this truck stop. You know, it'll change my life. I'm unhealthy. I need to eat better. And it was like so sad that we couldn't do it then. It just wasn't possible. We had one location, and now we're actually reaching the point. It's just a function of personalizing the menu mix enough by location. So we don't sell the same thing at every fridge. You know, we have different price points and different offerings, whether you're at a location where you may sell a ton of one item and another location where you sell a ton of another. And that's all part of the platform that we've built. So it's really, can we get to that place? Is it on a route? And as we keep building those routes further and further out, it actually gets better.
Oh, man. I cannot wait to get Farmer's Fridge next time I'm rolling through Kentucky. Luke Saunders is the CEO of Farmer's Fridge, 130-plus locations around Chicago and Milwaukee. You can find them, of course. The salad in a jar is what most Chicagoans know. There's a lot of other options, but salad in a jar and a vending machine in the food court. Luke, thanks so much for being my guest tonight.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
Welcome back to Download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, coming up this Friday, the place to be is the Empty Bottle. Saturday, the Co-Prosperity Sphere in Bridgeport. You got two chances to see Preoccupations. Occupations, formerly Viet Cong, are bringing their style of post-punk to Chicago, touring off the success of their latest album, simply called New Material. They're getting great reviews for that album, which is the band's third. The album was released on Flemish Eye and Jag Jaguar Records. The track we heard above was called Espionage. Preoccupations are originally from Canada, but some have relocated to Brooklyn. And like I said, they have two big shows coming up this weekend, one at Empty Bottle, which is sold out, and one on Saturday night at the Co Prosperity Sphere in Bridgeport. Joining me on the line, guitarist and multi-instrumentalist Scott Monty Monroe from the band Preoccupations. Monty, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
First things first, doing two shows back-to-back on a Friday and Saturday in Chicago. What does Chicago mean to you? Obviously, you guys tour all the time. What does coming through Chicago, playing two shows back-to-back mean?
It feels really good. We've always had good times in Chicago. We've done Pitchfork Fest there a couple times, or just once, I guess. And then, yeah, we've had really good shows there. I'm excited to be back there for a weekend. It's going to be good. I'm excited.
A lot of your history is about how much you guys just tour. I mean, you tour exhaustively. You're always on tour. Do you like it when you get a chance to stop in a city, even though you got two shows and you got a Friday and Saturday night, but is it an easier, take a less of a toll to play, stay in the same city overnight?
Oh, yeah, way less. You can, although it's nicer if both the shows are at the same venue, but it's nice to play at two different places too, you know, to get some, get a different vibe going. But, it is nice to just not have to drive, you know. You can, sleep until whatever time, and like, especially mostly I find touring, you just never get a chance to see any of your friends. Like, we've got friends in all the cities that we go to, but then you're always just like, hey, if you want to hang out with me, then we got to hang out on, you know, I can hang out from like 5 to 6 on Thursday, and then that's it. And then I'm going to be gone again. You know,
yeah, right,
so I
right.
feel like at least with 2 days, you can like make some plans and like go out right. for lunch with somebody.
There might be a brunch in there somewhere, right? You know, there's a lot in this album that is about change. There's reading the story of what you guys were going through, just the fact that you weren't all in the same place, and your routine as a band had changed. Talk about what went into the change of making new material.
We kind of just got off the tour when we first started working on it, and we had just had a few months off, and we were like, oh, we should just get into the studio. But it was the first record that we'd done in a long time where we didn't have any songs going into it. Like, for the self-titled Preoccupations record, we had a bunch of stuff, some of it even recorded already, that was left over from the Viet Cong record. And then there was just some other, we had a bit of time in between when that record was recorded and when it was released. You know, we had like a year to kind of start working on that one before we started touring the Viet Cong record. So it was like partially done. Whereas this one was the first one where it was like, we just came off the road and then just went into the studio and started writing.
Was that a freeing experience to do it that way?
Yeah, honestly, it was really nice. Like, and it was just good to take a little bit of a break. We first off went to Montana. Our singer Matt his parents actually have like a cabin, or it's like a house kind of by Kalispell in Montana. So we went out there for a month and just like started working on whatever, like, you know, just like everybody just kind of throwing ideas out and seeing where we got to. We got most of that Espionage track recorded there, and like a bunch of other stuff, that the song Manipulation on the record too, and Disarray. We got most of those ones kind of done. Yeah, and then we went for another month to this town in British Columbia, and just like where we go with our friends a bunch of the time, it's like a kind of this little like hippie town in the middle of nowhere. We went there for another month and just kind of worked on more stuff, but then we had to start getting ready to tour again. And then we kind of toured through to the summer and then just got back at it in the summer. Me and Matt got a studio space in Montreal and started working on the record there. And then that's kind of where we got most of it finished.
Wow.
I don't know. I think it all happened the way it had to happen, you know?
Right. Well, what's great about it is it's all, you know, obviously when you talk about theme and the fact that there's a lot that's talked about the intent of the lyrics and the idea of staring change in the face or getting out of your routines, and there's some stuff about depression as well. But what I really like as well is the fact that there's some experimentation on the record from your point, you know, bringing in different sounds, trying different styles, maybe some stuff that you guys hadn't done before. How easy was it for you to introduce that stuff and think about changing your sound and even the way you approach your sound with the band?
Yeah, I think like I'm always trying to make it, I don't ever want to make the same record over and over again, you know. I'm always like trying to figure out what the next thing is, you know. And I know Matt is too. Like, we're both, all four of us are kind of like pushing for what's going to be the new sound for the band always, you know what I mean? And so it's like, I don't know, I felt like on this one we kind of just did it like that. I'd been listening to a lot of those, like, some of those, like, Public Image Limited records and, like, a lot of Talking Heads and stuff, and we were just kind of like, I don't know, just trying to figure out how we could get more out of just the drums and the vocals. If the song could just live there, then that would be cool, and then we just figure out what else needed to go into it, you know? Yeah, so I don't know, we kind of, like, I guess took a bit of a different approach with that. I was, like, really honed in on the drum sounds for a long time, and Mike was a real big help, too. He was, he had some good ideas for some recording stuff and some production ideas. And him and I spent a lot of time, actually in the second month that we were working, him and I spent a bunch of days in the studio, just the two of us, kind of like just trying different stuff, like taking the takes that we already had and just trying to like process them differently and try to make them sound crazy.
I always think about the, when you have success and you've had success as preoccupations, even before that with Viet Cong, you get into a rhythm and a routine in the way that, you know, you know what your audience is like and you know what your loyal followers like. Do you have to wrestle with the idea of trying to keep it simple and similar to what people know, but also at the same time be artistic and expand on the musicianship and the experimental side of your style?
Right. I feel like it's almost more like right from the beginning of the band, me and Matt especially have always kind of like just had the idea that if we like the songs that we're making currently, then there's probably somebody else that will like them also. I don't know. I feel like I wouldn't want to like disappoint anybody who liked our other records, but at the same time, I'm not going to be the kind of band that's going to just make another record or like hoping that those people will like it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
Like I would love to keep all the same fans, obviously. And I think that all our records are similar enough that somebody who liked one of them would probably like all of them. But then, I don't know, it needs to be different in somehow, though, or else it just is like, you know, or else you're just like AC/DC or somebody who's a great band, too, but who, like, puts out the same record over and over again.
Yeah.
And that's cool in a way, too. I feel like some bands just kind of do the same thing over and over again, and then when they nail that thing, then they really nail it. Like, the best AC/DC song is, like, the best of that kind of song. And it, you know, it's, like, diluted down to, like, its purest form. You know, whereas I feel like other bands will kind of go more in the like, try a bunch of different stuff directions. And when you do it that route, then you end up with, like, a more diverse output, some of which won't work, though, because you're trying a bunch of different stuff, you know, and you're not necessarily sure how it's going to, like, work or how it's going to age or anything like that.
I'm interested in your thoughts on naming. You know, you guys have had such an interesting career when, you know, you had to switch the name from Viet Cong to the Preoccupations. People were upset with Viet Cong. You named the first two albums were just self-titled. The third one here, New Material. You definitely have a philosophy about naming. Talk a little bit about that, about why you don't go and either name something outlandishly and creative. Why do you just keep so simple when it comes to the names of the material you guys are doing?
On the Preoccupations record itself, I had this thing where it was like, when you write a set list out for a show, you never write the full name of the set list, or you never write the full name of the song on the set list. Always just like abbreviations or like one word from the title, or sometimes we'll just call them what used to be the working title still on the set list, you know? And so we were kind of just thinking about that, and we kind of wanted it to the back of the record to kind of look more like a set list in that sense, where it was just like how we were actually going to call the songs. Although now we've even shortened them all further, like garbage abbreviations.
Right,
but that was kind of the genesis of that. And then we kind of realized after that that we'd ended up like just kind of titling the songs what the like boiled down theme of that song was. And so then when this record came around, we were just like, oh, we should just do the same thing again. It kind of works nice to have it be like, you know, it's like that's what the song's about is the title of the song. And then it's the same with the New Material, you know, it's like that's just what it is. But it's also, I feel like New Material works pretty well too in like kind of like a post-industrial sort of, you know, it's like,
yeah,
you know, it's like they figured out the new concrete or whatever. That's kind of what I was thinking of it as. You know,
well, the album's great.
Like thing now, you know,
yeah, it's called New Material. Preoccupations coming to Chicago this weekend. Friday night they're at Empty Bottle, which is sold out, and then Saturday they're at the Co Prosperity Sphere in Bridgeport. Preoccupations, a new album, of course, like I just said, New Material. Scott Monty Monroe, guitarist, multi-instrumentalist for the band, join us tonight. Can't thank you enough for taking some time out, Monty. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks a lot, and we're real excited about the show. Time of the signs. I open up a book, I can't understand the meaning. I need something to eat. Falling over backwards in an embarrassing fashion. Embarrassing fashion.
Along here, download with us at 11 o'clock tonight. Justin Kaufman in. Coming up, 9 o'clock, Adam Hoge joins us. Breaks from his post-game duties, the White Sox, to talk about his first love, the Chicago Bears, the draft tomorrow. First round tomorrow through the weekend. What are the Bears going to do here? I don't know. I don't know what to think of the Ryan Pace years when it comes to his trickery, his draft trickery. Last year, of course, we were on live when we did the draft. We had the big show with Adam, and when the Bears announced that they had moved up in the draft, Mitchell Trubisky, there was some raw emotion in the room. A lot of, oh my! Tomorrow the White Sox play, so we won't be on for the draft, but we'll talk about it tonight. I'm interested because he does. I mean, the year before, I think it was the year before, was Leonard Floyd a rookie? He moved up. People forget that Ryan Pace had the 11th overall, the Bears did. And he engineered he traded up to get to the 9th pick to pick Leonard Floyd. So he hopscotched a couple teams that he was in fear of picking his player. And watching ESPN, we'll talk to Adam about this, and they were talking about it on NFL Live, this idea that if you know a player you want, yeah, why wouldn't you move up? Trade what you have to trade, because the worst thing that's going to happen, you don't want to be in that room when somebody picks the guy right before you. As a fantasy baseball champion, I don't know if I've mentioned this, Pete, four times in the last 10 years, I'm very familiar with that concept, the idea of somebody picking a player right before, you know, 9th round. You're looking for a good reserve outfielder, and boom, guy in front of you picks Cargo right before you. Someone goes, you got on your big board an Ian Happ. You're ready to go with Ian Happ. Somebody picked Ian Happ. Ah, I guess I'll take Andrelton Simmons.
You think he'll do something like was it Ditka? Did Ditka trade
everything
the entire
for Ricky Williams?
For Ricky Williams? Yeah, he was the Saints coach then.
I think he tried it like everybody, right?
Yeah, I think the entire draft for one guy.
I hope there's some of that. You know, I will say this. The NFL draft is getting boring with the Cleveland Browns at the top every year. As much as we don't have any room to talk, this will be the fourth year in a row that the Bears have a top 10 pick. When they traded for Floyd, moved up to 9. 4 years. Brad Biggs today or this week in the Trib said that this was the last time the Bears had this distinction was 1973 to 1976. To give you a little perspective of where we are in the glory, historic history of this franchise, we're in the mid 70s.
They got Peyton in one of those.
One of those, yeah. Which was also, I was reading a story about that the Walter Payton draft was a surprise shocker.
Coming out of Jackson
State. Yeah, the Bears had telegraphed that I forgot who it was, but they were telegraphing somebody else, and then they...
Sam Bowie.
Turned on the dime. They said, you can have Sam Bowie. You can have Clyde Drexler.
Different draft, I guess.
Yeah. All right, so Adam Hoge coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Stay with us. Always good to hear that song in the end of April. What that means is the NFL draft is right around the corner. As a matter of fact, one night from tonight. Tomorrow night, the NFL draft gets underway in the first round. Arlington, Texas at the Cowboys Stadium. Very exciting because the Chicago Bears have the 8th overall pick. And a lot of teams are quarterback crazy, which means that the Chicago Bears should be looking at a difference maker. A stocked draft, which gives them an opportunity to get a playmaker on either the offense or defensive side of the ball that is not the quarterback. Of course, Adam Hoge covers the Bears. You find out all his great material at WGNradio.com/Bears. And, of course, joins us during the season, during the Monday evening quarterback. He's on now. Adam, you excited? I know you've been doing a lot of White Sox stuff. Are you excited about the Bears?
Yeah, I'm always excited about the draft. I am also halfway excited for it to be over, too. It's 4 months worth of work.
I know, right?
As soon as the, you know, the season ends in Minnesota every year, which the schedule makers continue to make us do week 17 in Minnesota. Every year, you know, okay, typical routine, new coach comes in, and then get ready for the next top 10 pick that the Bears have. Fourth year in a row that they're drafting in the top 9, at least.
Jeez.
Unless they trade tomorrow, which is a possibility.
Always a possibility with Ryan Pace, who has proven in his time drafting for the Bears. He did move up to get Leonard Floyd at 9. Last year, of course, moved up to get Mitchell Trubisky. What do you expect from the Bears? I mean, they're sitting pretty at number 8 because there are a lot of quarterbacks that there are a lot of quarterback hungry teams ahead of them. Do you see the Chicago Bears and Ryan Pace going with a safe bet and staying at 8, or do you see them moving around?
Well, I'll tell you what, Ryan Pace's track record so far in the draft has been anything but safe. You look at his last three picks. I mean, Kevin White was a guy who, while he was thought of by most as a top 10 wide receiver, he came from an offense where he lined up mostly on one side and only ran a few routes. He did not run the whole route tree and did not have a whole lot of experience. So a lot of what Kevin White was a projection and a project. And so even if he hadn't had these injuries, when he has been healthy in training camp, we've seen a guy, like even last year, he was still raw, even though he was in his third year. And he still, you could tell he didn't have a whole lot of experience. Then in year two, he trades up for Leonard Floyd, another project, another guy who, great size, length, quickness, athleticism, all the above, but didn't have a whole lot of meat on his bones, wasn't physically ready for the NFL. They knew he was going to be a project. And then last year, not only do they trade up one spot for a quarterback, and you and I talked about this a ton last year, I was fine with the move, and he was my number one quarterback last year, but Mitch Trubisky only had 13 college starts. And that was the big question mark on him. So his first three picks have been anything but safe, right? So tomorrow, I mean, whatever we determine to be safe, I think Quentin Nelson's pretty safe. That doesn't mean he doesn't go in that direction if Quentin Nelson is available there at number 8. But the point being, anything can happen. He is the unexpected GM here. And I think he's done a good job of keeping not only the media guessing, but other teams guessing.
Yeah, he does
as well.
A good job of that. He's been a guy who's held his cards close to the vest. All right, let's talk about the Chicago Bears. Of course, being the number 8 pick, when you look back at last year, a 5-11 season that once again was under expectations, fans are starting to get a little antsy. What do you see as the glaring hole? Where do the Bears need to find a guy in the first round? Where does he have to step in right away and play to make this team better?
Well, the thing is they still have so many holes that I don't know, other than quarterback, Justin, I don't know that there's a positional, or let me just say a player, that they could be available there at number 8, where I would say, nah, they don't need him.
Right.
You know, and that includes Minka Fitzpatrick, the safety out of Alabama, who I think can play multiple positions. I think he can play corner. I think he can play safety. I think he can step in right away as a nickelback in that slot corner position. You could argue that right now they're okay, doing okay at safety. Adrian Amos and Eddie Jackson, who's also from Alabama, played with Minka Fitzpatrick at Alabama. But, you know, I think that's actually the perfect example of how nothing's off limits. Keep in mind, Adrian Amos has not been locked up going forward. He's entering the last year of his rookie deal. That's not necessarily, if they were in love with Adrian Amos, who obviously improved last year, they would have locked him up by now going forward. So to me, that tells me that anything's on the table. And I think that's what we have to keep in mind here, other than quarterback. They're obviously not going to do that again. So there's a lot of options here, and that includes it's funny. If you had told me, Justin, 4 months ago that everybody, not everybody, but the overwhelming consensus from media members in this town seems to be that they not only will go defense, but should go defense,
I
would be shocked. Remember, we
top
just
10
spent,
defense, right?
Yeah, we just spent 4 months talking about how messed up that offense was.
Right.
They still need guys on that side of the ball.
All right, let's talk about the big because I think the elephant in the room is Quentin Nelson, who you have projected as the number one prospect in the draft, and a lot of people do as well. Guard from Notre Dame, Mahler, who you would not be surprised would be in the Hall of Fame and when his career ends. He is a consensus one of the best athletes in the draft. I mean, even watching ESPN when they're talking draft boards, they're like, it's going to be a run on quarterbacks, but the real, you know, Saquon Barkley and Quentin Nelson are the best people in the draft. As Bears fans are starved for showbiz, for pizzazz, for a winning record, for Mitch Trubisky and new coach Matt Nagy to light it up, are we going to be okay with a guard from Notre Dame at 8, a guy who essentially replaces a position that has been serviceable?
Yeah, it's not a sexy pick, and I get that, and I have a feeling if that's the pick tomorrow night, there will be a lot of Bears fans who, I don't know if disappointed is the right word,
right,
but maybe
disappointed, but yeah,
underwhelmed by taking a guard that early. I think that this idea that only tackles are worth taking in the top 5 is one of the most overrated things in all of football. Sure, protecting the quarterback is very important, but we're seeing, as linemen get more and more athletic on both sides of the football, that those interior linemen are just as important.
Yeah, right.
And I, the one thing I took away from the Mark Trestman era had to do with Aaron Cromer, who was brought in from New Orleans, which, by the way, is where Ryan Pace came from, and was the offensive coordinator, but really an offensive line specialist. And what they did in New Orleans for Drew Brees was build inside out on that offensive line. And part of that had to do with his height, right? And so keeping the middle of the pocket clean so that he could always step up into it.
Mm-hmm.
But I always liked that philosophy. When that came over to Chicago with Aaron Cromer, that's what the Bears did. That was when they drafted Kyle Long. And that was when they really spent a lot of time working on that. And so ever since that happened here in Chicago, I have been just a big of fan of working on the interior of their line. That's why I like Cody Whitehair so much, even going into that draft and when they drafted him, and continue to like Cody Whitehair going forward. So if Kyle Long comes back healthy and you have Cody Whitehair, who can then concentrate on being a good center, which I think he can be if he can stop moving all around at these different interior positions and just stick at being a good center, that would happen if you add Quentin Nelson. All of a sudden, your interior of your offensive line is so much better,
yeah,
and that
right.
makes those tackles better. Charles Leno isn't the best left tackle in the league. He's also not nearly as bad as Bears fans make him out to be. I think ultimately there needs to be an upgrade for Bobby Massey at some point, but if he's the starter this year, you can get by if those other three yeah. interior positions are good.
Especially if you're playing a different scheme, and we'll talk about that too. Matt
sure.
Nagy, the coach of the Bears now, with the different offense coming in. Adam Hoge joining us here on WGN Radio, covers the Bears and, of course, does the postgame for the White Sox as well. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation with what to expect for not just the Bears tomorrow night, but what we can expect over the weekend, as they also have a high pick in the second round, which is as exciting to me. It gives a chance to get two great players, if not trading down, but two great players to plug in right away for the next season with the Bears. All right, stay with us.
Chicago Bears.
Download 720 WGN, talking NFL draft with Adam Hoge, who's you're not going to be down in Arlington, Texas tomorrow?
No.
Draft town?
No, I mean, I guess there's a good chance they'll, whoever they draft will be there. But
yeah,
there's no way to,
yeah, that's
there's
right.
no way to
that's
guarantee
right.
it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You know, as we talk about the NFL draft, it's so funny to think about. Obviously, at the beginning, or like you said, in Minnesota in week 17, everyone was talking about, I mean, the earliest projections of a mock draft had the Bears taking a wide receiver. Now, yeah. obviously, Allen Robinson came here in free agency. So did Gabriel out of Atlanta. And in that as well, we lost Cam Meredith to the Saints. Is there any chance that we'll see in the first two rounds the Bears think offense and think wide receiver?
Sure. In fact, I think it's very likely in the second round, especially if they're somehow able to add a second pick, which is something we can also talk about at some point. But absolutely. Let's not forget about the fact that they let Cam Meredith walk away. And sure, they had that had a lot to do with the fact that they signed Allen Robinson and Taylor Gabriel. But, you know, I would argue that if Allen Robinson, God forbid, were to go down the way that Cam Meredith did last year, they're in the exact same spot they were last year.
Yeah, right.
At that moment, which was all of a sudden you're relying on Kevin White to be your number one go-to guy.
Absolutely.
And after that, you just have a bunch of guys. Like, I understand the potential with Taylor Gabriel, but this is a guy who really hasn't put up a whole lot of production in his career, and I think we're kind of overrating what he is as a player. So that to me speaks to a lack of depth still at the wide receiver position, and there's a lot of good wide receivers who could potentially be available there in the second round. And the two names I have at that position at the top of my draft board, Calvin Ridley, who I think was getting overrated as a top 10 guy, and now I don't think he's getting enough credit because he's full. Some people don't even think he's going to get drafted in the first round,
wow,
which that would surprise me. But he could be in play for the Bears if they were to trade back potentially into the teens or something like that. And then DJ Moore from Maryland, who's a guy I saw in person this year when Northwestern went to Maryland. Guy had like 7 different quarterbacks in college. They were all terrible, and yet he somehow looked really, really good all the time. He reminds me a lot of Steve Smith. So if he somehow slipped into the second round, I think that would be a great pick for the Bears.
The other issue as well, when we talk about, that's such a great point to think about. If Allen Robinson had an injury, an early injury, and was going to miss playing time, you would be looking at a depleted wide receiver set as we know, as we have right now. So it almost points to the fact that the Bears are going to have to make a move. I think of the same thing at linebacker. The Chicago Bears in the offseason let Pernell McPhee walk. A couple other guys in there, of course, Jarrell Freeman, who wasn't coming back after the suspension. But, you know, what used to be considered the strength, where you had a good pass rush and a good interior, has become somewhat of a, I don't want to say a weakness, but a concern. You know, there are guys that already, Roquan Smith out of Georgia, also Trumaine Edwards out of Virginia Tech. There are big names in the linebacking core that drop off significantly as you get past the first round. What do you think about the idea of the Bears going for a linebacker to be a part of this linebacking crew in the first round?
Well, again, here's the problem. It's not the deepest position in this draft. Bradley Chubb's obviously very highly regarded and is probably going to be gone by the time the Bears pick, unless Ryan Pace shocks everyone and trades up to go get him. And once you go past Bradley Chubb, there's a bunch of projects. There's a guy like Tremaine Edmonds from Virginia Tech, who is really more of an inside linebacker, who has the size and speed to play on the outside, but he's never done it before, really. So that would be a huge project. There's a guy named Marcus Davenport coming out of the University of Texas, San Antonio.
He's got Bears written all over it, by the way. University of Texas, San Antonio.
Oh, yeah.
First
Ryan Pace.
Shocked the world.
Yeah. 6'6", 264. Tall, long, raw player. Sounds a lot like Leonard Floyd, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know that even if they went that route with one of these guys that Ryan Pace has fallen in love with before, can those players, though, contribute this year when the depth is already a big issue? And I am worried about the edge rushing position for the Bears. I think that it looks a lot like the wide receiver position looked like at this time last year, which was one guy, Leonard Floyd right now, and then a bunch of other guys. I mean, Sam Acho and Aaron Lynch, who they signed from the 49ers. Those are your other edge rushers right now. They have to. I don't know how they're going to fix that, except with adding a couple bodies here with rookies. And so it's going to be a tough position this year. They better hope Leonard Floyd becomes a Pro Bowler.
Yes. 224 made a good point about, I think it was the year 2000, that the Bears had the 9th overall and the 39th, and they picked Brian Urlacher and Mike Brown that season. I mean, and to be fair, both of those guys, not necessarily contributors in their first season as rookies, but of course that made a huge impact in their careers, NFL Hall of Famer and Brian Urlacher. But yeah, if you could get that, we'd take it, right?
Sure, and I'll give you a different linebacker. You'd be playing on the inside, but Roquan Smith from Georgia is a guy who I really believe could be the quarterback of the defense for a decade. He just is so sound. He's not the tallest guy. He's not going to check all those boxes that the GMs fall in love with in terms of just the physical attributes of a player. But you turn on the film, and he's just a very sound, instinctual player. No one has the instincts that he does. I think that would be a great pick at number 8 for the Bears.
Adam Hoge joining us tonight, man who joined us for the Monday evening quarterback all season long for the Bears, and of course covers the Bears. You can get all his stuff at WGNradio.com/Bears. Also does the White Sox postgame. All right, we'll take a break. We'll get the news with Rob. We'll come back and stay on the Bears draft as we talk about the top 20 prospects that Adam has listed, and really about whether or not the Chicago Bears can see any of these guys at the second round pick. If possible, we might see them trade out of that too and get back a third round pick. There's a lot that can happen, and Ryan Pace has proven in the past that he will make moves. So we're just getting started here. Adam Hoge joining us tonight. Stay with us.
They're the monsters of the Midwest.
Thanks, Rob. We're previewing the NFL draft, which is tomorrow. The Chicago Bears with the 8th pick, also the 7th pick in the second round. No third round pick, and then 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th. That's when you start taking punters. Adam Hoge is on the line. He covers the Bears, WGNradio.com/Bears for all the stuff, as well as doing the postgame for the White Sox. All right, what I want to do in the second half here is really kind of go down. You put up a great post about the Bears' big board, the top 20 prospects that are that could be available, and whether or not they get to the second round or wherever the Bears might is irrelevant. Let's go through. So essentially, we talk about every player on that list. So when they pick one of these guys tomorrow night, you, the listener at home, you're like, oh, that guy, right? Why don't we start with who haven't we talked about? We talked about Quentin Nelson. We didn't talk about Saquon Barkley.
Yeah,
Saquon Barkley, running back. Any chance that the Bears, who have said that they are firmly behind Jordan Howard, would pass up a Saquon Barkley if he was on the board?
I think it's doubtful. But the one thing you got to keep in mind here is really no one knows what the Browns are going to do at number one. And the scenario that would be great for the Bears is if the Browns take Josh Allen. Well, actually, let me just make it more simple. The Browns do not take Sam Darnold, number one, because the Giants at number two probably won't take a quarterback if Darnold comes off the board at number one. But I it seems like they like Darnold, though. So if Darnold's still available at number two, they take a quarterback. Then all of a sudden, I think four quarterbacks come off, maybe even the first five picks. It'll be very, very interesting to watch. That could create a scenario where an unlikely scenario right now where Saquon Barkley or Bradley Chubb fall to the Bears. And if it's Barkley, and I've been on record on this for months, yes, the Bears have Jordan Howard. But if Saquon Barkley, who I can't find a weakness in his game, he can do it all. He can catch the ball. He can run the ball. He can block for you. He can return.
Running back out of Penn State, yeah.
Yeah, he can return the ball for you. He's a different animal, and he fits Matt Nagy's offense a lot better than Jordan Howard does. So I think that you absolutely take him if he somehow falls.
Yeah, and I have to say the same thing, good to great. We've been talking about it on this program with you and other. I mean, it really is a philosophy where if a great player and a difference maker, we see what Ezekiel Elliott did for the Dallas Cowboys. If a running back, a franchise player comes available, you have to think about it. All right, let's keep moving. Derwin James, Florida State safety, 6'3", 215 pounds. Again, we talked about we don't really know where the Bears are at with safety, but Derwin James could fit the bill.
Well, and I think this same thing, good to great. Adrian Amos took a big step forward last year. Eddie Jackson needs more development. He's only played one year, and he looked pretty good in year one. So I would say this is more about a question with Adrian Amos, who's entering the final year of his rookie deal, which I mentioned before, and has not been re-upped yet. That, to me, leaves the door open for somebody better coming in if the right guy's available at number 8. Derwin James out of Florida State's a very, very good player, and I wrote it right there on my Bears big board. Stop settling for good players. Start finding difference makers. I think Derwin James could be one of those difference makers.
That has been one thing we talked about all season long, the Bears defense, top 10 defense, right around the bottom half of that 10. To move up to a top 5, which you've seen players in the offseason talking about, it has to start, beginning and end with turning the ball turnovers.
Yeah.
This team is deficient in ball hawking and trying to get the ball, interceptions, causing fumbles. They just, for some reason, they don't have that skill, that gene. So guys like Derwin James, or even the other guy who we have at number seven, Josh Jackson, the corner from Iowa, they fit that bill. That's what they did in college. They went and got the ball.
Exactly, and I love Josh Jackson, who I saw play in person this year when Northwestern played Iowa. He's a guy that he used to be a wide receiver, and most former wideouts who end up as DBs end up that way because they can't catch. In Josh Jackson's place, in his situation, he still can catch, and he's shown it over and over again with some ridiculous interceptions, one-handed interceptions. So again, I mean, this is a little bit of a different situation because realistically, the Bears have, you know, invested $18 million guaranteed in Prince Amukamara now. They just went through the whole transition tag thing with Kyle Fuller, who's guaranteed a whole ton of money. So on the outside, I would, again, good to great. Amukamara and Kyle Fuller, as good as they were last year, they're not intercepting a whole lot of passes. But in this case, I don't see that happening because those guys are locked up. That is a lot of money. So I would see more like a Denzel Ward from Ohio State who fits the slot a little bit better as maybe the more likely scenario out of those two
corners. And it's hard to see the Bears picking a slot corner, a third corner, essentially, with their eight overall.
Right. It's a trend that hasn't. What we've seen is a huge trend the last 5 years in more nickel packages with that slot corner being on the field for the majority of the game. However, we have yet to see teams go out of their way to draft a slot corner that high up to fulfill that spot, which I'm not against it, but we just haven't seen it yet.
All right, let's keep going. Offensive tackle. Mike McGlinchey out of Notre Dame, 6'8", 312 pounds, the top tackle prospect in this year's draft. That is an area of need for the Bears. They've survived with Leno and Massey, but they definitely could upgrade if McGlinchey was available, even if by chance that McGlinchey fell to the early second round.
Yeah, and I think he's ideally suited on the right side, too. So I think he's a guy that if the Bears ended up with McGlinchey, he could just take over for Bobby Massey pretty quickly at right tackle. I don't think he would be a replacement for Charles Leno on the left side. For another reason being, people forget, everyone just wants to move Leno to the right side because like, oh, he's an okay left, he'd be a great right. People forget that when he first came up, he couldn't play right tackle. Mm. It wasn't until he moved back to the left side, which is where he played in college, that he actually became a serviceable starter in the National Football League. So I like McGlinchey. Not a whole lot of top tackle prospects this year, and I wonder if that's going to lead to him getting overdrafted, but I have him number 10 on my big board. I like him a lot, and let's not forget, everyone's talked about Harry Hiestand, the Bears offensive line coach, being here for Quentin Nelson if the Bears were to go that route. Well, he also coached McGlinchey at Notre Dame.
All right, so you know, you got a couple more here, but I'm fascinated as well about defensive line. Of course, Akeem Hicks has played lights out, Eddie Goldman, of course, but that third spot, you know, which was... what was the guy's name? Who I don't think is with the team anymore. The white guy, Unrein. That was Unrein's spot. But I mean,
underrated player.
Yeah, but you know, he's not returning, so it's like, well, you know, where are we with the defensive line? You have Taven Bryan from Florida as a possibility, a guy in the draft that could be available in the second round. Do you see that the Bears need help with the defensive line?
I don't think it's a huge need. I think part of the reason why Mitch Unrein was able to walk out the doors because Jonathan Bullard, and a lot of people disagree with me on this one, but I thought Jonathan Bullard played really well last year, took a huge step forward. He didn't get a whole lot of opportunity because Mitch Unrein was also playing at a very high level, and he was John Fox's guy. So I think Bullard's got a chance to step in there and be just fine. And also Eddie Goldman is still there. However, very interestingly, like Adrian Amos, has not been picked up beyond his rookie deal, and he is entering the last year of his rookie contract this season, so that's something to watch. I don't think it's a huge need. I'm not a huge fan of Vita Vea out of Washington, and I do like Taven Bryant, but he would probably be more of the outside end rather than the nose tackle. So if anything, maybe add some depth for Eddie Goldman, who's had some injury problems. but that's a very multiple front, and Vic Fangio's constantly moving guys around up there. Right. I think it's actually strength and is one of the reasons why they may be able to get away, if they can stay healthy again up there, which they did last year, they may be able to get away with some of the deficiencies at edge rusher right now.
When we have a lot of fun with this, previewing what we think is going to happen in the draft, and obviously it never goes the way that we think it's going to go, but the hints and the what we can read in the tea leaves, especially with a new coach, with Matt Nagy coming in and bringing a different offensive scheme. When you look at the tape on Matt Nagy and you know what kind of offense was run both in Kansas City and in Philadelphia, are there glaring needs? Of course, they upgraded at tight end to bring in Burton in the offseason. They dealt with bringing Allen Robinson and Taylor Gabriel to stretch the field. Are there positions that have to be there? They have to be there if Matt Nagy's going to have a successful offense.
Well, I'll, beyond what I said about the wide receivers earlier, and I think they have to add at least one more good wide receiver, that's why I keep going back to Quentin Nelson. I don't think they need to overthink this thing. Not only is it a necessity to be able to block in any offense, whether it's Matt Nagy's scheme or not, but they need to protect their investment. Let's not overlook that. What did Ryan Pace do last year? He went up and got Mitch Trubisky, and they cycled in a bunch of different guys at guard. They let go of Josh Sitton, who was their best left guard. They need somebody to protect. They need guys to protect their big investment that they made last year. And the guy they need to stay healthy more than anybody on that offense is Mitch Trubisky. Do you want Chase Daniel in there week three? I mean, let's be honest here.
You keep giving us these great scenarios.
Well, this is the stuff you have to think about, especially with this Bears team that can't stay healthy ever. So if Quentin Nelson falls, man, you go take that guy, you make your offensive line a lot better, you protect your investment. I just think it makes too much sense.
Of course, last year the Bears gave up their third-round pick for the trade for Trubisky. Do you see them, and Pace has done this, but do you see them trading out of the second-round pick? Do you see them possibly trying to add more pieces to the draft so they can get a bigger haul?
Yeah, I'm trying to think back at what they got specifically a couple years ago when they kept trading back, and they ended up with Cody Whitehair, which turned out to be great, but I'm thinking about what they got in return. I think that's how they ended up with so many fourth-round picks that year.
Which is Jordan Howard, yeah.
Yeah, typically when you're trading back in the second, you're not going to recuperate a third unless you're moving back, you know, really far back. But you may be able to add another fourth, and right now they do have two fourth-round picks. If they're gonna add a third, it might be a result of moving back in the first, which is a possibility. Ryan Pace says he's got eight guys that he likes, and if four quarterbacks go in the top eight, there's a chance to move back as many as four spots there. You know, I can do some math there and figure that out and still get one of your top eight guys. So that's where, and it depends. You know, if you want to move back to, say, the Bills pick at 22, that second Bills pick that they have, well, now you're talking about adding a 2019 first-rounder. So getting something like that. So it's all about how far you're willing to go back. And it'll be fascinating to see. I could see it going either way. I could see the Bears trading back, getting more picks. I could see them also, and I feel like I'm the only one who's been saying this, but it would not shock me. Ryan Pace's track record the last couple of years shows me that if he has conviction on a guy, he will go up and get him. And I am perfectly fine with that. I think people are overrating fourth-round picks, fifth-round picks. They're nice to have. They're nice when you hit on them. But if it's a matter of a fourth or a fifth or a third, which they don't have right now to trade, to go make sure you get the guy you're absolutely convinced is going to be great, you go do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And hopefully that would be Bradley Chubb. There you go. That's what I'd like to see the Bears get. Adam Hogue, I'm looking forward to it. I wish we were going to be in the studio watching and doing real time, but of course you'll be watching the White Sox and doing the post game tomorrow night. The draft tomorrow, the first round, and of course throughout the weekend. Adam Hogue covers the Bears for WGN Radio. You can find it at WGNRadio.com/Bears, all his stuff, and of course does a post game for the White Sox. Adam, thanks for joining us, and I appreciate it.
I will be giving updates during the White Sox game tomorrow, by the way, for draft updates for you. So we have that to look forward to. Thanks, Justin.
All right, buddy. I'm still looking forward to it. I understand. I get a lot of people who say, football in April? Can't we have any time off? But I got to say, I love the draft. It's fun to see how it all plays out. It's constant. And like I said in the carryout, just so many athletes dressed awkwardly. My favorite is when they put their hat. Like a lot of the players, they'll have a lot of big hair. A lot of big hair these days in the NFL. So they got to put that hat on top of the big hair. And when they get that hat to send the Cleveland Browns hat, and they try to put it on maybe a little to the side. Got to keep that style. Yeah, it's always good. Yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting. I hope that I'm one of those Bears fans who gets what Adam is saying about Quentin Nelson. Yes, smart. You're absolutely right. Got to protect Mitch Trubisky. It also could be great to grind out on the, you know, Jordan Howard and win games in the fourth quarter. That would be awesome. I also would like a safety who scores pick sixes. So, you know, I can't have both. All right, coming up to swap meet. I have a funny story about swap meet. This weekend, I saw my parents, and guess what they gave me? My bin that I've been looking for, right? Yeah, they gave me a bin of all the stuff. They said, we're cleaning up stuff. Here's a bin of all your stuff that you grew up in. I'm like, only one? Wow, thanks. But the funny part of it, I have not opened it yet. Like, there are so many artifacts of who I was for 18 years of living at home.
Oh, man.
And my mom carefully crafted it to put it all together. That's what she told me. And
are you afraid?
It's just like I forgot about it, you know? And then yesterday I was like, oh, this is great for swap meet. I can't wait to show Greg this stuff. And then this morning I was like, oh, I got to get to work. And I was like, and then I got to the garage and I started the car and I'm like, oh, the bin. I'm like, eh, next week. Swap meet's not going anywhere. It's classic. Like, you know what? No, forget about it. The swap meet coming up, 312-981-7200. What do you want to brag about tonight? Excited because the weather's going to turn. Here come the garage sales. Here comes Wolf's. So many great things happening. If you got something cool you want to brag about, if it's the best tonight, we'll give you a pizza. How about that? 312-981-7200. The swap meet coming up. Stay with us.
It's time for swap meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure. Like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for swap meet with Justin Kaufman
and Greg Flam.
Here we are. How Wednesday about night. That?
Wednesday night. It's a swap meet sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. Greg Flam is here at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. Tonight, you call up, you text in, you got a question about your memorabilia, your collectibles, your junk. We'll find out if it's worth anything and if it's the best of the night, the best brag. I'm gonna throw you a pizza.
Nice.
Right? Out of the
Can't
goodness
that,
of my heart.
Right.
Out of the goodness.
But they gotta have something, you know.
Really, it can't just be can't, right. Yeah, right. It just can't be. I've got this I don't even know what we always
Barbie
get.
Barbie doll or something.
Barbie doll, yeah.
Signed Ryan Sandberg ball or something.
Right. Not that
right. Nothing
Ryan
wrong
Sandberg.
With that.
Nothing wrong with that, but we get a lot of that. All right, so Greg Flam in studio. Good to see you, buddy.
Good to be here.
Garage sale season yet? No.
Yeah, last week was
really?
Great. Yeah, the weather right. was awesome. I found some great stuff. I brought in a couple items I found. And this week, the listings look a little thin, but I think the weather's going to be the impromptu garage sale, so keep an eye out for that.
Is that good or bad?
That is really good because they don't advertise their sales. So if you happen to just ride up on a sign sale, they just put the sign out, that's usually pretty good. There's not as many people to compete with, you know, picking over the stuff.
Are you the kind of guy who shows up at a garage sale and just has question after question, or are you a quiet guy that keeps to himself?
You know, it's hit or miss. I love to promote the show. Anyone will listen. Oh. So there's that. You know,
you're but not that's, a small talker. Talk around with the.
You know, you know what I do, and I'm going to give the secret here is if you're looking for something, if you're an albums guy or if you're watches or whatever, you know, ask them because a lot of times they won't put out the good stuff because they know they're not going to get their price for it. But if you're a guy that will pay up for what you're looking for, ask them, you know, and that's usually what I'll do is I'll walk up. Hey, do you have any albums? Do you have any posters or I advertisement.
Mine is very similar, but when I go right to the woman who's at the chair, and I'm like, do you have any Playboys? That's what I do. I'm a collector. Of Playboys.
Yeah. Nice.
You know, 70s Playboys?
Yeah.
Take a look. I'm a collector. I'd like to collect these.
That is good. Yeah, that is.
All right. 312-981-7200 is a phone number. I'm just going to do that bit. I'm going to stop. If I see a garage sale anywhere in the vicinity, I'm going to stop, even if it embarrasses family, to do that bit, to just walk up. Oh, yeah.
And I dare you to use your real name.
It's Justin, and I am a collector of Playboys.
And WGN, right.
What do you have here? What do you got with us?
Okay,
you got
a poster, so I found this today, yeah. And it was only $3 at an estate sale, and it is the 50th commemorative illustrated poster for Comiskey Park All-Star Game. So this came out '83, of course. But the cool thing is that Britt Burns actually signed it.
Oh, wow.
So for $3, I got a signed, you know, Sox poster.
Did they know it was signed?
They actually had two of them. I don't think they knew, to be honest.
Yeah, because it's kind of a small signature.
Yeah, it's very small. And there was so much stuff in the house that they might have missed it. I would think they missed it. Otherwise, they might have charged more for it.
My favorite part about this illustrated poster is the uniforms, the different uniforms that have been used. And as for as much as the Sox like to throw back, is that Michael Jordan in the middle? Who's it in the middle?
I think Minnie Minoso, yeah.
But as much as they like to throw back to these jerseys, they never throw back to the collared ones. The Chet Lemon collared ones of the late 70s,
80s. Well, you see, they stayed away with the shorts. They didn't do the shorts on Britt.
Yeah, Burns. I don't know. I think this would be the year, if you're listening, White Sox, this would be the year to bring back the shorts.
Sure, why not?
Right? Yeah. I mean, start Bill Vecchin.
Nothing to lose, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Let's get some shorts on. I want to see some shorts on Avi Garcia. I want to see once his hammy is cleared up. All right, so you got that, the All-Star Game poster.
That's good. Cool.
So it's you bought $3. What do you think you're going to get for it?
You know, there's only one right now on eBay, and they're started an auction. It's at like $25, so it's minimum $25. It should go up.
That's a good one here.
Yeah, cool. So I was happy, you know, me with my posters. But this is a lighter, and lighters are really a hot item. I rarely get to buy them because they're either way overpriced or they're already gone by the time I get there. So I was able to get this. This is a music box lighter. It's made by a company called Thorin's, and you know, you press the button here and it's lights up there.
It's like a knight.
Yeah, it is. It's a knight. They made them like three different kinds. Some have the shield, some don't, some have holding a spear or something. But these are like $100, and so I got lucky, you know, getting this. And right now I think it's at $82 with auction, so I did an auction. So it could go higher than 100. So
that's cool though. I like that one there a lot.
Yeah, that was cool. And then I brought Don from Wolf's, let me bring the presidential Furby in.
What? Look
this
at that
is,
thing.
Yeah, and this is mint in the box, never been opened. It's probably worth $50 to $75.
Wow.
And unlike like the Cabbage Patch Kids are not really worth much, but if you have Furbies or any interactive doll or toy, those are, you know, keep their value, and they're doing pretty well. So just people might know Furby, you know, you have to teach it how to talk, you got to feed it, you got to do like the interactive pet thing with it.
It's kind of the same family as the Gremlins, right?
They look
the
very similar. Yep.
I forgot what was it before they turned into a gremlin. Someone will remind
Mogwai
us.
Mogwai or something?
Yeah, little guys who, oh, you're the cute. Yeah,
don't feed them after midnight, right.
Yeah, that's what they kind of
look like. Yeah, this one's your 2000 presidential version. So it's, you know,
nice.
It's a little bit up. A normal Furby in the box, probably $30. Open without the box, it's really not even worth it. You're probably at $10.
I have a funny story that I was saying right before the news that I got the bin from my dad's pole barn.
Okay, cool.
Of all the stuff that I grew up with, right? And my dad brought it to the car this weekend. He's like, hey, you can have this. And I'm like, what? This is crazy. This swap is awesome. I can't wait to go through it. I haven't gone through it yet.
All right.
I haven't even opened it yet.
All right. You got to get
but
to that.
But we were talking, and he said, yeah, it was fun going through all these stuff. He's like, I was going to clean off for his grandson. But he's like, I'm going to clean off. I found a C-3PO, right?
Oh.
And I was like, hey, any chance any of that stuff still in the box? Started to talk like you, Greg. I'm like,
right.
What are we talking
about?
What condition are we in?
Right.
And he's like, no, there's nothing in the box. I'm like, ah,
But yeah,
Kenner 78, anything?
Yeah, Kenner stuff even opening will right. do well. So
all right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We'll take our first break. 815 says, "Do you really collect Playboys? You're just having fun." I'm always having fun.
Yeah, right. This show is nothing but
no.
fun.
I don't. That would be the fun, the bit of me walking up, and I would grow a real bushy mustache before I go there, and I'd be like, "Hi, how you doing?
Yep.
I am a, I collect Playboys. Mm-hmm. I'm going garage sale to garage sale. Just wondering if you got any spare Playboys."
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think that would be creepy.
I am speechless.
Greg Flam at Two Page Picker in studio. It's a swap meet. Stay with us. It's the download. It's a swap meet. Of course, sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. Awesome to have Greg Flam here at DuPage Picker, both Facebook and Twitter. The calls and texts are coming in. We're ready to rock.
Yep.
Are you ready?
Bring it.
Strap it in. Laura, start us off. Laura, what do you want to brag about?
I have several prior to World War II German marks. Okay. 10,000, marks per certificate. Plus, I have two Barbie dolls, 1968, one in a box and one
Ooh.
Without a box.
Ooh. Wow.
1968
Barbie. Was it all hippied out? Was it wearing like a go-go dress? What was the 68 Barbie?
Well, you know, I haven't looked at it for years, so I even forgot what they were wearing.
She's got American flag bell bottoms, and she's burning her bra. Steve.
No, I'm sure that wasn't
That was not it. It was political Barbie.
Yeah.
Political protester Barbie. Right. What do you got?
The marks, it looks like 1,000 of them go for about $3,000.
Wow. So you get your money's 10,000, worth on that. That's awesome.
Looking good. Depending on condition,
of
course.
If I had 1,000 marks, that's individual certificate, it would be worth $3,000. But it's not like 10,000. Marks per certificate.
Yeah, this one is a lot of 20 that I guess total 1,000.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how that
so
works.
So that, I would definitely consult like a coin shop, but just try to get the information. Don't sell it when you go there. Just get the information if you can.
I could bring one of them, could I not?
Yeah, you could do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
And what about my
And then
Barbie
the Barbie,
devil?
Let me look that
they
up.
They were 68 Barbie. 1968.
Yep.
Right.
I know the 1962 Barbie is the holy grail of Barbies.
Oh, well.
That is the one everyone wants to have. But a 68 is, it's up there. It's in the $500 to $700 range.
Wow.
So that's not bad.
That's very good.
Laura, you're killing it.
Let me see what they're actually.
Great great start to the swap meet tonight. Laura bringing the big guns.
Yep. In the box, even higher. You know, one sold for upwards of $1,700 in the box.
$1,700 in the box.
So,
and $500 to $700 without the box.
Yeah. In that range. So I would $500 to $1,700.
Yeah, parties at your place. All right, thanks, Laura. Appreciate it.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Good job.
That was
Laura
good.
Coming in.
Yep, strong.
224 says, "I still have my 1989 Billy Ripken error card." We've talked about
that.
I was 10 when I got it, and you could see why it was my prized possession back then.
Yep.
This is where there's a swear word right on the glove.
Yeah, I think it's he has FU or something on the bottom of the bat, on the knob of the bat, and it's facing the camera.
So, and it's on the Topps card or whatever.
And they
just
printed
missed it.
And they missed it. Yeah.
There's nothing I like better than baseball hijinks.
Yep.
Right? Baseball hijinks always gets the job done. All right, let's keep going here. 312-981-7200. I've got, 630 says they've got an Elton John Reg Strikes Back album. Ooh, signed by Elton John himself. 630 has the... album looks framed.
Anytime you have a signature involved, it can be a big spread. Once sold for $46, and people are asking $400 for them. Mm. You know, for the available ones. But
what's a hot song off of Red Strikes Back? Is Don't Go Breaking My Heart?
I think it was more like I'm Still Standing or
I'm Still Standing.
Something like it was that era.
Yeah, not my favorite Elton John era.
Yeah, not.
I'm more of a late '70s Elton John kind of guy.
Same here. Yep.
Yeah. 773 says, "I have a signed Die Another Day poster from Pierce Brosnan, Judi Dench, Halle Berry."
Yeah, the signatures might bump up from what I'm seeing solds are, but they were $100 for like one signature on it. So if you got three, you know, it might be a little bit more than that. Currently, there's one on there for $82. I think an auction, starting at an auction for that.
All right. Get someone. Let's go to Karen. Karen, what do you want to brag about, Karen?
Yes, I have a Navy wooden sea chest that's very large, and my father-in-law was in the Navy from 1917 to 1919.
Wow.
And then there's some World War II newspapers in there, and also I have the ration stamps from when I was like 2 months old from World War II.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's the lead. You've got the ration stamps?
Yes.
We had the...
I was only like 2 months old at the time, but they still gave them to my mother for me.
Wow.
They're like, hey, only buy a certain amount of dollies. I have to say, I'm fascinated by that. We had the World War II in Chicago documentary that was on. John Davies did. And I watched it, and we interviewed him, and there was a whole section on the ration stamps that were given out here in Chicago, and talked a lot about the scams and how they worked around those things. That's pretty cool.
Wow.
How much are those? What does a ration stamp from World War II go for?
I don't know what the ration stamp, but the wood chest, it can be $100 and up just for the chest. So obviously I can look up the other items while we're talking.
Yeah, okay, that's okay, I guess, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would think it'd be more than that, but yeah. Maybe they got a deal for $100. But yeah, let's see what a ration stamp is going for.
What do they look like, Karen?
What does what look like?
The ration stamps. Is it like a...
I don't know, they just look like a little... Like, I think they're, I haven't brought them out in a while, but I think they're more or less like the size of a green stamp used to be.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And he has some for like sugar and some for flour and.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, the ones I'm finding here are brown, they look like, and they're going for $5 each.
Starting
auction. They could go a little bit
higher. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
This country was rationing supplies. There were stamps sent out. It's a one-time only thing in this country, and it's worth $5.
Yeah, the highest I'm saying,
Karen, don't
is
listen
$60 for like a lot of them.
Well, I think it's great. It's my lead right now. Mm-hmm. This is, Karen, you got the lead for the best brag, the ration stamps from World War II.
Awesome.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Jane, what do you want to brag about, Jane?
Yes, hi. I'm calling for a friend who's hard of hearing, and that's why she didn't want to call.
Okay.
But she has an autograph book, you know, a kid's autograph book that has autographs of all the White Sox and Yankees who played in the late 1930s and 40s.
Wow. And this is a book or a program from the game, or what is it?
No, it's a book, an autograph book.
Oh, autograph book. Okay.
What was the thing I saw in the paper today? That the Babe Ruth White Sox trade telegraph, they're auctioning that off for thousands of dollars. And Joe Knowles was on last night, the guy who wrote the decade-by-decade history of the Chicago White Sox. Learned a lot about those teams back in the 30s.
Yeah, you're going to have that professionally like evaluated because you're basically selling autographs, so I could look up specific ones, but it would take a lot of time. So,
It's pretty cool, though. I like that,
Jim. Yeah, it is. And to have them all in one book is a great,
pretty great
collection.
All right, thanks, Jane.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yep.
All right, 312-981-7200. Good first half.
Yep.
I got to say, liking Karen's rations.
Yeah, we'll get some
World
different
War II
stuff.
Rations, $5. What's wrong with you people?
I know.
That should be worth a lot more than that. 312-981-7200. We will take a break, get an update on tonight's news, and we will come back with the second half of the Swap Meet with Greg Flam. So stay with us.
It's time for Swap Meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Or it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman.
And Greg Flam.
Here we are, second
That's
half.
Right, second half for the Swap Meet, sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. 312-981-7200. You can find Greg, of course, online at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. And right now, the lead is Karen for her having the World War II rations to get the free pizza, the best brag tonight. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the best brag, last week's winner is on the line. Joe, join us, buddy.
Hey, Joe. Hey, I'm assuming I have a couple real experts there on the value of Playboy magazines.
All right. What do you got? So
this is not a brag. This is a question. The ones I've kept are the Marilyn Monroe issue.
Right.
The very first issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the one with Vanna White.
Yes.
Wheel of Fortune.
The Marilyn Monroe, it should be the 1953 issue, and those have gone upwards of $6,000, $4,000 to $6,000. Yeah.
You're kidding me.
But those are like graded, mint condition. So,
sure.
But if you have that one, you might want to have someone check it out, maybe pay to get it graded if you're going to sell it.
Absolutely. To
get the bigger money. Some of the other ones, like a Trump cover or a Trump issue, is going for $1,000. That was from 1990. Mm-hmm. And then, of
Trump
course...
Trump centerfold? How much is a Trump centerfold?
Was that on a bed or what?
Pardon me?
Was that centerfold on a bed?
It's on a gold toilet.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We're going to leave that. Yeah, but the Marilyn Monroe, that's tends to be the highest one, and that should be the 1953. As we talked in the past, most people, they collect the month and year they were born. You know, it's just kind of something,
sure.
You know, they have. But, yeah, they're otherwise, you know, like you said, the Vanna White, that one I'm guessing is probably $20 to $50 maybe. It's not, unless it was signed.
So not top drawer. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you got the Marilyn Monroe, that's a good one.
I had no idea that thing was that valuable.
Yeah. Hopefully it's the 1953 one. Yeah.
What was the very first issue? That was it?
I think that was the first issue. And I know Marilyn Monroe was in the first issue, and I want to say that's the 1953 one.
Yeah. Gotcha. Appreciate it, guys.
Cool, Joe. Thanks
Joe.
For calling.
Thanks for calling, buddy.
Adios.
Rex, got another Playboy question. I have.
You opened that can.
I opened the can of worms. Rex, what do you got? What do you want to brag about?
My Playboy magazines.
All right, what do you got?
Anyway, they're from 1969
okay.
through 82 or 83. Mm-hmm. I have about 90 of them.
Okay,
they're in excellent condition. I had a friend that used to work at the place where they printed them. I think it was Hall's Printing.
Okay.
Anyway, he lost his stars. He gave them to me years ago, and I don't know. They've been sitting there for 10 years, so I don't think what they were a couple bucks a piece.
Yeah, but upwards on average, like $10, $10 to $12.
I have the some of the anniversary ones, like mm-hmm. maybe the 15th, 20th, 25th, two right. or three of them with the anniversary. I think it was a special edition.
Right, and
but they're
yeah, again, it was like if you have like Vanna White or I think the Suzanne Summers, Bernadette Peters ones, those are right. Tend to be a little bit higher.
Any of the cast of Baywatch.
Right.
But the average ones are still worth something, like $5 or something?
Yeah, at least probably, between 5 and 12 each.
Well, would you be interested in, you know, drop them by no. and you look at them?
No, not really. Thanks, though, for
we'll
the
come
offer.
Over and observe them. Yeah, right. Buying them.
But Justin might roll up on your garage sale one day.
I might come up with a garage sale, Rex.
Oh, hi. I've heard you have Playboys. I'd like to take a look.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we could bundle them, you know.
Right. Yeah, that, you know, sell them as a lot.
There you go. All right. Thanks, Rex.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling, buddy.
All right. Thank you.
He's so dejected. I almost got rid of him.
Yeah.
He was so excited for a second there. He's like, this could be the moment. I'm going to get Greg and Justin to buy all of them. And then when we told let him down, he's like, all right, I'll see you later.
I do buy, but not Playboys.
Yeah.
So if you've got other stuff.
Hey, man, that's your business.
Right. Hit me up on Facebook.
312-981-7200. Chris, 847, says, I have a 1985 Topps Olympic rookie Mark McGuire card.
Yeah, I was surprised with this one.
In near mint condition. No creases or bent corners.
Yeah, I mean, signed, this card signed has only gone for $85.
Oh, wow.
I thought it'd be a little bit more. Not a lot more, but, you know, 100, 200. But one recently sold for $85, graded and signed. So unless I'm missing something here.
All right, there you go. 616 says, it's a pretty wide variety, but I have DC Comics Silver Age. I have The Flash, number 120 through 350.
Wow.
Probably all good rating. Average condition. No idea what they may be worth or how to find out.
Yeah, what I was able to find, like issues number 120 to 130, that lot recently sold for 150.
All right, that's not
and,
bad.
And those were not graded, so that's not
that's
bad,
good,
I guess.
Right. All right, keep moving here. 630 says he's got a couple of Barbies by Mattel.
Mm-hmm.
Barbie and Midge.
Mm-hmm.
Bed bugs. I don't know what that if that's a thing. Never removed from box. $10 from a garage sale.
Yeah, that's if you got them for $10, that's a great price because 60s. I think it was 60s or early 70s for Midge, and she's going for like $300.
Wow!
But you know, if you have 60s Barbies, they can go upwards of $3,000 in the box. So
wow,
you want to definitely have those checked out.
Everybody loves the Barbies in the box, huh?
They got to be 60s because after like the 80s, 90s, you're lucky to get what you paid for them. You know, I see so many like 90s to current. You know, you're lucky to get $9 to $20. You know, and that's what they were going for when you bought them.
Well, hopefully, all my Barbies are in my mystery bin. You know, I know those Barbies growing up. You know, it's in my mystery bin that's now in my garage.
Yep. Well, hopefully, there's some Kenner Star Wars mixed in.
Yeah, right. 224 says it was "Can You Feel the Love Tonight" was the single off that Elton Johnson.
There you go.
Not a fan of that one.
Yeah, equally as average.
Yeah, it feels like.
Wasn't that from a movie too?
Yeah.
So he doubled dipped on it, put it on his album and on the movie soundtrack.
Yeah, it's a Lion King song.
Wasn't that?
Isn't that the Lion King?
I think it was.
I don't know. 224 says 2 years after every New York Giant wrote a book celebrating their Super Bowl 21 victory, my mom plucked a hardbound version of Sims to McConkie.
That's awesome.
Signed by Phil Sims out of the markdown bin at the mall sports shop. Wow. Mm. Oh, that's a winner.
Yep, that is
what do you got on that?
One roundabout way of getting that. I couldn't find that one, of course, but a signed Sims book is going for about $50.
Really?
Yeah, so.
But Sims to McConkie?
That, yeah, obviously you would think that'd be more, but that's you're not going to find a price online.
Well, for I don't know what the price would be, but now I have a dilemma on my hands. Do you go with the rations, a historical marker, something so intriguing from this country's history where we had rationed things like flour and mm-hmm. milk and sugar? Karen has some of those rations. So you have that, which is unbelievable to think about the history. And then the history of Sims to McConkie.
I'm going to vote.
Signed by Phil Sims.
Let's go highbrow this week. We've kind of.
I mean, there's so many ways to go, but the Sims to McConkie.
Do we need a tiebreaker vote?
Man. We need a tiebreaker. 262, I've been waiting for you, 262. He says, essentially into respect for Vern Troyer, who died this mm-hmm. week. He does not have any autograph jokes for us. Every week, 262 will text in and have a Vern Troyer autograph joke for us to try and steal the pizza.
Yeah.
And then I saw the news, 262, mm-hmm. this weekend or whenever it was.
21st.
And I turned to my wife and I was like, Vern Troyer. And I'm like, oh, man, the guy who always texts in mm-hmm. on the swap meet is going to be so bummed.
Yeah.
And listen, look at you. You're getting a little respectful. 262, you're turning over a leaf.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, the fact is Vern Troyer stuff, the value will go up now as far as like on eBay and stuff. So
yeah, so now we're actually talking about right. Vern Troyer stuff.
So call in next week with what you got.
708 says, actually the song I Don't Want to Go On With You Like That was the big hit on Elton John's Reg Strikes Back. Can You Feel the Love was mid-90s.
Yeah.
You know, this is the problem. I continually go one source from the texters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I should know.
Right.
If your mom says it's true, you got to fact check her.
Double check, yeah.
Yeah. And here I am throwing out Can You Feel the Love Tonight. Not even close, not even right decade. Yeah.
Still not the best decade for Elton.
Yeah. I Don't Want to Go On With You Like That. I don't mm-hmm. even know how that one goes. What's it?
There we go.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Beats by Zim.
Oh, yeah. I don't wanna go on with you like that. Oh, yeah. Now I hear you bragging. I can already hear the cha-ching. Now I feel like this album signed Elton John, it's going up, right? Just for that jam.
But what Download Nation wants to hear is your country voice that you do your karaoke
to. I don't wanna even go on like that. Right, here we go. Let's see if I can find it.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Dig deep.
Yeah. I don't want to go on you like that. Don't want to be another feather in your cap.
Yeah.
Well, you tell you, honey, I ain't that. But I don't want to go on you like that.
Whoa. There you go.
Yeah.
Seven's mic drop.
Country, yeah. And there he goes, Justin. Once again, coming to karaoke nights every Tuesday night. All right, 312-981-7200. We'll wrap up the swap meet coming up here, final break. And then we still, you got Sims to McConkey or the rations. I got to make a decision coming up here. Stay with us. I've always felt like you need a soundtrack, Rob.
Come on, man.
Yeah, a little something.
Absolutely.
Right, I'll work on that, get an instrumental going.
More like Sweet George Brown.
Yeah, there we go. We'll get that going for the cast. Swap Meet, Greg Flamm is here, at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. We're wrapping up this week's... let's see what we got here. We got some good stuff here. I have a Roscoe Frankenstein battery-operated, the blushing Frankenstein from the 60s, whose pants fall down. It's not the mod Frankenstein.
Yeah,
what? What is that? I don't even know what's happening there.
Not sure. I'm thinking it might be one of the model, you know, like the models. But,
oh, I see.
I'm trying to find it.
It's not the model Frankenstein. It works perfect.
Yeah.
I like the mod Frankenstein. It makes me think like it's a 50s Mad Men vibe.
Yeah.
Contemporary.
Trying to find right. it here.
630's got a slew of trading cards. We got a Dukes of Hazzard trading cards, also Charlie's Angels trading cards, Star Wars trading cards. All these late 70s.
Yeah, the 70s cards like Charlie's Angels, Dukes of Hazzard. If you have the mint, like 36 packs in the box, $200 to $300. Star Wars, obviously, much more than that from the 70s. But Star Wars, they put out so many more cards than Charlie's Angels or Dukes of Hazzard, so they're going to be all over the place as far as pricing.
All right. 312-981-7200. We've got a book author here. A couple of books. Uncle Wiggily.
Okay.
And The Red Monkey. 10 Stories by Howard Garris. G-A-R-I-S. Garris. Why Peter Rabbit's Ears Are So Long. What? Uncle Wiggily and the Milkman, 10 Stories by Howard Garris, all illustrated by Mary and Wallace Stover.
Yeah, I couldn't find a going price, but available, there was one for $49, the Uncle Wiggily and the Red Monkey.
Yeah, the covers look creepy.
Mm.
I mean, it's got that creepy
illustration going
illustration on. Where you're like, is this racist? It's got that vibe.
Yeah.
224 has got an autograph of Muhammad Ali dated 1967 on a cocktail napkin. I'll sign something for you.
Yeah.
1967.
That is wild, but...
I feel like... when did... Someone would know this, and I should know this from Jonathan Eich's book. We did the whole... the big table with him on this bio. But when did he change his name? Was it... It was mid-60s, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like it was around that, right?
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, yeah.
I mean, a signed, I couldn't find obviously that, but a Sports Illustrated signed one for $150. And you would think that is low as well. I would think it'd be in the $300 to $400.
How do you even do that? I mean, that's a hard one too.
Yeah, it's, you know, especially for a cocktail napkin, it's basically the signature, and then you got to get it authenticated and all that. So
630. Clarifies the Frankenstein. So battery-operated Frankenstein.
Okay.
There were two different types. One was the standard Frankenstein monster. The other was made to look like a 1960s hippie.
Okay. Let's see what we get.
The Frankenstein hippie. Like, just like the Barbie.
And Midge, yeah. They're all hanging out.
Right.
That's crazy. Right. I can't find it. I'm sorry. Hit me up on Facebook.
Yeah, I'll figure it out. All right. So we wrap up here. 312-981-7200. But I'm going to wrap and give away the pizza. And it really does come down to Karen, who had also texted in here. And she had texted in saying that she had over 200 stamps and certificates. Right? So Karen, we're talking about the ration. She has the ration stamps from World War II for things like flour and sugar and milk. I mean, just extremely historic, a very strange time in our history where we had ration stamps.
Right.
So that's one. Mm-hmm. And then second, it's really hard to, and this is the hardest, it's a hard decision, but it's a hardbound version of the book Sims to McConkie. Signed by Phil Sims out of the markdown bin at the Mall Sports Shop, a Super Bowl 21 victory, of course. This guy's mom plucked Sims to McConkie out of the bin. So it's Ration Stamps and American History, in which Karen was alive, 2 months old,
she said.
Versus Sims to McConkie. That's a tough one. Well, whoever's going to win is going to get a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. What should I do, Greg?
You know, I want to go highbrow, like I said, I love the irony of the Sims to McConkie thing, but I think we need maybe a tiebreaker.
Yeah. Pete, what do you think? I know you. You're a big McConkie guy.
More of a Pavaro guy.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Karen, you can have them. Karen, for the rations.
And the
sea chest and a moving moment in American history, the ration stamps. You've got them. Thank you so much for the Sims to McConkie. It really wasn't my choice. You can tell the rest of the staff really pushed us towards the historic stuff.
Outnumbered.
But I really liked the Sims to McConkie.
It was a good story.
Signed, Greg Flamm at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. Are you going to be at Wolf's this weekend?
I'm always at Palatine, so we're okay. Check me out.
We're okay in Palatine. Greg Flamm, great to see you. See you next week, buddy.
Thanks.